bloodshed. I flip my channel back to CNN and I lit another cigarette.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. California builders and contractors aren't too happy with Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's decision to allocate $3.8 million of the state's new budget to a labor studies institute at the University of California. The Institute for Labor and Employment was started by former Governor Gray Davis to provide policymakers with information regarding trends in the state's labor force, such as the value of city living wage laws. The Golden Gate chapter of the Associated Builders and Contractors of California was hopeful Schwarzenegger would follow through with his campaign promise to kill the institute. But pressure from the California Labor Federation forced the governor to maintain funding.
On Friday, the U.S. agreed to make a 20% cut in some of the $19 billion in subsidies paid to American farmers each year. The agreement came during the around-the-clock talks with other members of the World Trade Organization. The cuts include subsidies for corn, cotton, rice, wheat, and soybeans. Some West African countries have claimed that American cotton subsidies have had a devastating effect on thousands of farmers in their countries. The trade talks imploded in 2001 when the U.S. and European Union refused to address the subsidy concerns of poorer nations.
A union of East Coast grocery workers meets with a federal mediator today to try to hash out a labor agreement with grocery giant Shaw's Supermarkets. If a deal can't be reached for the 39 union stores in southeastern Massachusetts and Rhode Island, about 6,000 employees are set to strike this week. Shaw says it won't budge from its final offer, which includes a 27% cut in benefits and raises insurance copays without increasing wages.
Workers in Athens are still threatening to strike during the Olympics. Hotel workers, drivers, and paramedics have been warning the government about the impending strike for more than 2 months. They are demanding bonuses for the increased stress they will endure during the Games. The problem? No money. The budget for the Games has already spiraled above the proposed budget. The hotel strike is set to begin next Thursday. The right to strike is a valued democratic right in Greece, and the government is concerned about the potential fallout if an emergency decree is issued making walkouts illegal.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Pirates don't just exist in movies. According to a report released by the British Maritime Bureau, pirates have killed more people in the first 6 months of this year than during the same period any other year in the past decade. 30 people have been killed so far in 2004 compared to 16 last year. The most dangerous waters are off the coast of Nigeria, followed by Indonesia, Vietnam, Bangladesh, and the Philippines. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at AMIBA.net.
What do Kalamazoo, Evansville, Albuquerque, Stockton, Phoenix, Columbia, St. Louis, and Charleston have in common? They're some of the cities where the Secret Service or police have jailed people for displaying anti-Bush signs during public appearances by His Eminence King George W. Is this America, the land of the free? That's what Nicole and Jeff Rank asked themselves this July 4th as they were taken away in handcuffs by police in their town of Charleston, West Virginia. What was their heinous crime? They were guilty of not being Bush supporters. George W.'s Independence Day trip to Charleston was billed as an official presidential visit, not a campaign rally. Nicole and Jeff, two patriotic, hard-working, tax-paying Americans, were in the crowd, quietly exercising their free speech rights. They wore T-shirts declaring, "Love America, hate Bush." They had proper tickets to the event. They proudly sang the national anthem with everyone else. They were in no way disorderly, but they were not politically correct, so they were summarily arrested, taken to jail, fingerprinted, and charged with trespassing. Others who were there wearing pro-Bush T-shirts and Bush campaign paraphernalia at this public event on public property were not arrested. It seems that the Bushites define trespassers by their political beliefs. Nicole, who worked for the Federal Emergency Management Agency in Charleston, was promptly told that her services were no longer required. Technically, she wasn't fired, but she was released from her job and not reassigned, meaning she no longer gets paid. This is Jim Hightower saying, but Nicole and Jeff are still not bowing to King George. They're fighting Bush's absurd, un-American assault on their constitutional right to dissent. They're not the only ones being denied their right to speak out. Dissenters all across America are being treated like this. To fight this autocratic lockdown, call the ACLU, 212-549-2500.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just from making your first six payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold-hearted cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George W.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, on radio stations from coasts west to east and places all in between. Beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org with archives of White Rose Society, and on our website at tomhartman.com. Drop into our chat room if you'd like. It's filling up fast. Let's go to Tom Hartman and click live chat. Well, who does Al-Qaeda actually want to win the November 2nd election? Here we are, what, 92 days, I believe, out from regime change. It's been 1,064 days since 9/11. Within 2 months of the amount of time from Pearl Harbor to the Normandy invasion. But have we secured the homeland like we did in those 3 years between Pearl Harbor and the Normandy invasion, with victory gardens and don't use your nylons and rationing gasoline and putting everything that possible into the war? No. No. Our administration has said, go shopping, don't worry. Oh, we can't afford to secure the ports. Sorry, that would cost $8 billion. We would have to roll back some of the tax cuts for the rich. Not going to do that. We can't afford to keep those 100,000 police on the beat that Bill Clinton put there. We would have to roll back some of those tax cuts for wealthy investors who now only pay 15% income tax on return from stock market gains rather than the 30-some-odd percent that you can earn if you're a regular taxpayer. And heaven forbid, we may even have to start charging them payroll tax. No, we're not going to do that. No. Sorry, you just can't have those cops. And fire departments, new equipment? No, come on. We'll do it for a few cities and make a big deal about it, but not the whole country. You got to be kidding. What, secure chemical plants? Nuclear plants? No, I don't think so. We'll leave it up to industry to solve their own problems. And if they have to raise the price of gasoline or electricity, that's their business, you know, after all. So anyhow, here we have the Center for American Progress reports on the war on terror. An article in last week's New Yorker dealing with the Madrid bombings. Remember Spain? Bomb went off a week or so before the election. The ruling conservative party, which had been in favor of invading Iraq over the objection of 95% of the Spanish people. The largest outpouring of demonstrations in the streets of France Spain in the history of Spain, including during Franco's regime, including during and before and after, before, during and after World War II, protesting the Iraq war. This bomb goes off, and this regime, this right-wing conservative aligned with Bush regime, says, oh, it wasn't Al-Qaeda. Because, see, that would make them look bad. It would make them look like they hadn't been bothering to keep track of internal security. It wasn't Al-Qaeda. That was ETA, the Basque separatist movement. There's this part of Spain this other group who all archaeological, anthropological evidence seems to indicate have been there thousands of years longer than the Spaniards. They have their own unique language that has no root in any of the other European languages. They claim they're the descendants of Atlantis, for those of you who are into New Age conspiracy theories. There's hard to come up with any other explanation for it. The Basque language has no roots in any known language. And for hundreds of years, thousands of years, at various times in the past thousands of years, they have had their own country. No, they don't call it Baskerville. The Basques have had their own nation, but Spain has said for, I believe, most of the 20th century anyway, and probably back into the 19th and 18th centuries. Maybe this goes back to Queen Isabella. I'm not a Basque scholar, but Spain has been saying, now, sorry, you've got to assimilate yourself into Spain. In other words, we get to control what you do with your property. You pay taxes to Spain. Spanish corporations can operate there and all this sort of thing. And it's just, sorry, not your game anymore. But the Basques had never attacked anything except symbols of Spanish authority. They had been very careful in the decades that they had been fighting a guerrilla war, they perceive it, against the Spaniards. Very careful never to target civilians. They go after the army, they go after police stations, things like that. Never civilians. And so when this train got blown up, of course the government, which was a coalition with Bush, didn't want to make it seem like, hey, this is what happens when you join with George and his Don Quixote routine, one man with a long lance going after a windmill here. They said, no, it couldn't have to do with Al-Qaeda. It must be the Basques. And everybody in Spain knew it wasn't the Basques. The Basques said it wasn't the Basques. And they're quite good about claiming credit for what they've done. They're rather proud of their efforts. And so the Spaniards said, okay, you lied to us about the war in Iraq. Now you lied to us about the bombing. We're over it. But not only that, the polls showed, even before the bombing, that the Spaniards were over it. It looked like the liberals were going to, the Liberal Party, the it's actually called the Socialist Party in Spain. Not true socialism like Marx's socialism, but, you know, more like traditional European liberal democracy. They said enough already. So anyhow, and so they threw him out. And now, of course, the right-wingers in the United States, faux news and the Bush administration, all this, their spin for this whole thing is, oh, the Al-Qaeda blew up a bomb in Spain, and that caused the Spanish people to throw out the good guys who were on the side of George Bush and bring in those awful liberals. Well, it turned out that those awful liberals, who actually believed in things like Social Security and Medicare and a minimum wage and a 40-hour week and protecting the borders of the nation and protecting the workers with appropriate tariffs so that the domestic industries didn't get wiped out and Spanish workers didn't have to compete with Malaysian workers, those liberals were probably going to win anyway. That's what the polls showed. And but, you know, the cons in the United States, and ask any Spaniard, the cons in the United States have spun it somewhat differently. So the Center for American Progress points out, an article in last week's New Yorker dealing with the Madrid bombings directly contradicts recent unsubstantiated statements by Bush administration officials and media pundits, the vast echo machine. The terrorists are rooting for John Kerry to win the White House in 2004. The New Yorker reports a terrorist group claiming affiliation with Al-Qaeda, the Abu Hafs al-Masri Brigades, has publicly stated its desire for President Bush to remain in office. Well, of course. He's the guy that's giving them all the publicity. In a message sent to a London newspaper just days after the Madrid bombing, the authors wrote, quote, "We are very keen that Bush does not lose the upcoming elections. Bush's idiocy and religious fanaticism are useful," the authors contended, "for they stir the Islamic world to action." And boy, have they. End of quote. The question is not whether this letter is valid or not. It simply highlights the fact that it's impossible to ascribe voter preferences to a terrorist group. Yet that's exactly what's happening without any proof whatsoever in the American media. Last month, Fox News pundit Dick Morris I'm not going to say it. It may come off as a gay-bashing joke, so I'm not going to say it. Fox News pundit Dick Morris called it an obvious fact that Osama and his allies all want Bush out. End quote. Likewise, on May 27th, CNN's Kelly Arena reported, with no evidence, quote, "There is some speculation that Al-Qaeda believes it has a better chance of winning in Iraq if John Kerry's in the White House," end quote. Nonsense. But that's the spin of the mind. That spin is going to be amplified over and over and over again all the way to 9/11. You're seeing the early steps of the Karl Rove tentacles. 92 days between now and the election, and you can bet every single one of those days, they got a giant calendar in the White House. Every single one of those days has associated with it a main story for the day, main talking points for the day. It's all pre-planned. And the goal, of course, every single day is to make sure that they're at the top of the news and John Kerry isn't. So Friday, John Kerry is going to give his speech. Oh, hey, look at, we discovered a terrorist in Pakistan last Sunday, but we're going to announce it today. And then on, Saturday or Sunday, one or the other, some 10,000 people in Pennsylvania show up for a Kerry speech. Never happened before, ever. This is mind-boggling. 10,000 people show up, and it's raining. And they all have to go through the metal detectors, and they have to surrender their umbrellas. So they're standing there in the cold rain without umbrellas for 3 hours waiting for Kerry to speak. He came out, he spoke, they went nuts. This was unprecedented. This was a brand. This is the beginning of a movement. And as this starts to hit the news, all of a sudden, Tom Ridge runs out and goes, "Hey, there's a terror alert! Terror alert! Look out! Washington, D.C., New York City. Yep, we got to go to orange alert, quick! Don't talk about that John Kerry stuff anymore." 1-866-889-8840. 8894, our telephone number. Boy, all the lines are ringing here. Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Oh, perhaps got to potch up there, Chris. I'm sorry. We lost your first few seconds there.
Hello, Tom.
Hi, Chris.
I'm sure that you were in the middle of show prep, so you didn't get to hear Ho-Ho the Sock Puppet cave on the 9/11 Commission recommendations to a large degree. You know, he's going to appoint a czar and all that, but it's not going to be part of the cabinet. You'll get all the particulars. At the very end, I was listening to it live, he made just an astounding statement. Quote, he says, "Knowing what I know today, we would still have invaded Iraq." He said that. I mean, you know, knowing that Iran facilitated 9/11, not Iraq, knowing that we wouldn't find weapons of mass destruction, that Americans would have died for lack of equipment, Abu Ghraib, thousands upon thousands of civilian deaths. Knowing what he knows today, we would still have invaded Iraq.
Well, it's the old, it's my story and I'm going to stick to it. He's the very careful, calculated political move. Nixon said it's more important to be consistent than to be right, or more important to be viewed as being strong than right. I forget the exact quote, but something to that effect. And this administration is, dancing all the way to the whatever with that thing. So,
take care.
Good point, Chris. Thanks for the tip. 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. Stick around. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry, there's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told if you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. 20% of Iraq veterans who were in at least 5 firefights are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, according to a new study by the New England Journal of Medicine. PTSD is debilitating, causing headaches, sleeplessness, hypervigilance, and depression. The disorder has plagued a total of 12.6% of soldiers returning from Iraq, and the chances of suffering from it only increases with the amount of time spent in combat zones.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the Project for the New American Century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. So, what is your race? Are you African American? Are you Caucasian? Are you Hispanic? Are you Native American? Are you Samoan Islander? Are you Arab? The Bush campaign wants to know. President Bush's re-election campaign, this from the Arizona Daily Star, insisted on knowing the race of an Arizona Daily Star journalist assigned to photograph Vice President Dick Cheney. Apparently, Dick Cheney does not want the wrong people taking his picture. The Star refused to provide the information. Cheney was scheduled to appear at a rally Friday afternoon at the Pima County Fairgrounds. Rally organizer for the Bush-Cheney re-election campaign asked Terry Hyatt, the Star's managing editor, to disclose the journalist's race. It was such an outrageous arrest, Hyatt said later, I was personally insulted. Now, you do have to undergo a background check if you're going to get close to these guys. You got to provide your name, your date of birth, and Social Security number. The Star had already provided that information for the reporter. And then the Bush administration said, well, that's not enough. We want to know what his race is. I would like to know why they want to know that. Hyatt says, apparently she's Native American. And he says, one has to wonder what they're going to do with that information because she has Indian ancestry. Are they going to deny her access? I don't know. Never found out because he refused to supply it. And apparently they let her in anyway over his making a stink out of it. Her name was Popat, P-O-P-A-T. A photographer with 6 years' experience was on assignment Friday and unaware of the controversy, but she said she was glad the Star refused. My race shouldn't have anything to do with my job, she said. Yeah. Well, also, we know that anybody who showed up for that Cheney gig had to sign a loyalty oath. Shades of Joe McCarthy. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. If you'd like to call in, Sheila in Denver, Colorado is on the line. Hey, Sheila, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I got a question for you.
Okay.
What do you account for? How do you explain the differences in the numbers of different polls? I could quote some from yesterday. George Stephanopoulos said yesterday morning, Kerry's ahead 49%, to Bush 42%. In the evening, the local news says Gallup poll, Bush is ahead 52%, to Kerry's 46%. So is this due to margin of error, or is this the right wing lying to us, trying to influence the election?
Well, you know, there's this old saying, you know, even paranoids have enemies. there are no doubt polls that are done by organizations that really want to color the outcome of things. I think, though, the probably the biggest variable in these kinds of polls is the question that's asked. A clean, straight-up answer is, if the election were held today, would your first choice for president be George W. Bush John Kerry, Ralph Nader, and then name the Libertarian candidate and the Constitutional Party candidate, or whatever, you know, toss in four or five names. However, sometimes they ask questions like, who do you think will make a better president, or who will do a better job fighting the war on terror, or blah-de-blah, and then they present that as results. Also, there are regional differences. Some of these polls are regional and some are national. Also, some of these polls are done on likely voters, some are done on registered voters, and some are done on potential voters, that is, people who have the legal ability to register to vote but may or may not have. So there's a lot of variation. We're going to see a lot of mess, particularly with anything national like this. It's just so hard to nail it down. We're going to see a lot of messy stuff done between now and the election. And however it's done, of course, both sides will try to spin it to their advantage. See, this shows our guy is winning, he's the best. Or this shows our guy's an underdog, please contribute more money. And, you know, welcome to politics. I mean, that's just going to how it's going to be, Sheila. I wouldn't pay a lot of attention to it, frankly. The poll that matters is the one on November 2nd. Sure. And be sure you get active in it. Thanks for the call. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. California builders and contractors aren't too happy with Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's decision to allocate $3.8 million of the state's new budget to a labor studies institute at the University of California. The Institute for Labor and Employment was started by former Governor Gray Davis to provide policymakers with information regarding trends in the state's labor force, such as the value of city living wage laws. The Golden Gate chapter of the Associated Builders and Contractors of California was hopeful Schwarzenegger would follow through with his campaign promise to kill the institute. But pressure from the California Labor Federation forced the governor to maintain funding.
On Friday, the U.S. agreed to make a 20% cut in some of the $19 billion in subsidies paid to American farmers each year. The agreement came during the around-the-clock talks with other members of the World Trade Organization. The cuts include subsidies for corn, cotton, rice, wheat, and soybeans. Some West African countries have claimed that American cotton subsidies have had a devastating effect on thousands of farmers in their countries. The trade talks imploded in 2001 when the U.S. and European Union refused to address the subsidy concerns of poorer nations.
A union of East Coast grocery workers meets with a federal mediator today to try to hash out a labor agreement with grocery giant Shaw's Supermarkets. If a deal can't be reached for the 39 union stores in southeastern Massachusetts and Rhode Island, about 6,000 employees are set to strike this week. Shaw says it won't budge from its final offer, which includes a 27% cut in benefits and raises insurance copays without increasing wages.
Workers in Athens are still threatening to strike during the Olympics. Hotel workers, drivers, and paramedics have been warning the government about the impending strike for more than 2 months. They are demanding bonuses for the increased stress they will endure during the Games. The problem? No money. The budget for the Games has already spiraled above the proposed budget. The hotel strike is set to begin next Thursday. The right to strike is a valued democratic right in Greece, and the government is concerned about the potential fallout if an emergency decree is issued making walkouts illegal.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Pirates don't just exist in movies. According to a report released by the British Maritime Bureau, pirates have killed more people in the first 6 months of this year than during the same period any other year in the past decade. 30 people have been killed so far in 2004 compared to 16 last year. The most dangerous waters are off the coast of Nigeria, followed by Indonesia, Vietnam, Bangladesh, and the Philippines.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Yes, the Macarena! Boogie in the studio here. It's going to be time to boogie in November, I'm telling you. It was so ironic. Somebody told me that Bob Novak on CNN a couple of days ago said that he was going to be producing proof that the Republicans intend to, or the Democrats intend to steal the election in 2004. And apparently, I didn't see this. I was just told about it. Apparently, everybody else on the panel with him nearly went into laughing, you know, hysterical laughing fits. It's just amazing what is going on here. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. If you'd like to be on the program, pontificate on the events of the day. We got a whole pile of news here to get through. We've got an interesting guest in the next hour. We've got the best of the rest of the news in the third hour. Retired General Bush's foreign policy is a national disaster. Let's get into what's going on with Bush's foreign policy and what the consequences have for you and me. 26 and a half minutes before the hour. Let's see here. Ron in Tucson, Arizona, listening on Sirius Radio System, is on. Hey, Ron, what's up?
Good morning, Tom. A couple of things. First of all, Tucson's divided. In the morning, you get the Arizona Daily Star, which is a liberal paper, and in the afternoon, you get the Citizen, which is a right-wing paper. And the thing here is this town is so culturally and racially and economically divisive, it's amazing. You have people who, quote, live in the foothills. You have five or six men who run the town. You only had 3,000 Republicans show up for that rally. There's four country clubs. There's I don't know how many golf courses. The wages here are miserable. There's an anti-Hispanic element that runs through the white country club crowd. The salary levels are low. It is just a horrible, horrible environment what's going on here, and I'm sure it's the same all city.
So you're suggesting all this is the explanation for why the Arizona Daily Star was asked by the Dick Cheney campaign, the race of the journalists that
absolutely.
They were sending?
We've got a Democratic congressman here, Rahul Grijalva, who is doing a great job in Washington, and they want to make sure that, you know, they're going to get only those white WASP elitists out there to cheer on Cheney, who belong to the country clubs and who are the power guys. Yeah. In town, and they don't want anybody else out here. So, you know, this is, it's a control issue. You know, you have a very, very, very wealthy car dealer here who does a lot of advertising in the paper, who's a nephew of Holmes Tuttle from California, and they control the town, you know, and these people are just so elitist. It's incredible. It's just a horrible thing what's going on here. So that's Tucson for you.
Yeah, well, it's not just Tucson. That's so much of small and middle-town America. What I think, the little bit of good news that I gleaned from what you said is that you've got a left-wing paper and a right-wing paper. That is very rare in the United States. I mean, I remember growing up when I was a kid in Detroit, there was the Detroit News and the Detroit Free Press, and they were left and right. But now it's the Detroit News/Free Press or something like. I think it's now just the Detroit Free Press, but the Sunday edition has both names on it. They got merged, and now the labor pages that used to be in the Detroit News are gone. They're toast. There's no discussion.
It's all about greed and power. That's all it is out here. Greed and power.
Yeah, it's a tragedy.
Thanks
a lot for calling, Iran. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Angela from Grand Rapids, Michigan, on the line. Hey, Angela, how are you?
Great. How are you?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's on your mind?
Well, I just had to call and tell you about the movement going on in Grand Rapids here. So, I just was down at the Curie. He's speaking at the Calder Plaza downtown, and there
this
are
afternoon.
People going around the block in lines. It's hot and muggy, and people are still out. And I was actually kind of surprised by the turnout, just because it's a weekday. I thought a lot of people would be working. But, it's been pretty impressive.
That's great. I mean, that seems to be happening all over the country, and the announcement of the terror alert yesterday bounced that story off the evening news. I didn't see it on any of the news reports, although, it had made the wire services, so I think had there not been a terrorist alert by Tom Ridge, it would have been news. But are you noticing on the at the Kerry campaign that, like with George Bush or Dick Cheney showing up in Arizona, our caller from Ron there just a moment ago, number one, they have a free speech zone 5-6 blocks away with police and chain link fence that they herd protesters into, and number two, that before you go in, you have to prove that you're Republican. You have to show your Republican registration card, and you have to sign a loyalty oath saying that you will vote for George Bush in 2004 and give them your driver's license number, your home address, and your telephone number so they can get you if you don't. Is that same sort of thing going on with the Kerry campaign?
As far as I know, it doesn't seem like it. I mean, there are different lines if you have a ticket versus if you don't, but yeah. I didn't really see like a separate section for protesters or anything like that. So, yeah. But I couldn't brave the line for long, so yeah. I didn't have enough parking meters left, so I had to come back home. But, yeah, it didn't really look like that. But, yeah, I just didn't have the patience to... wait in that line for that long. I was really impressed with how much the turnout was here. I was really excited about it because, you know, I know Michigan is a battleground state, and, you know, it seems to tend toward Democratic, but it's kind of a toss-up because we do have a lot of conservative people here, too. I mean, it's kind of a Bible Belt. I mean,
sure, sure.
A lot of the smaller towns, they're just... they have more churches than restaurants, you know? So.
Yeah, and the real tragedy is that so many of those so-called conservatives in middle America, and I certainly know who they are. I was one at one point, and I grew up among them. I mean, I used to attend the North Lansing Church of God there in central Michigan. That is that their religious values are very real and very important and very meaningful to them, and they think that that's what the Republican Party is all about. I mean, the Republican Party reaches out to them based on that, and they don't. And it's like a magic trick, you know, where the magician has you watching his right hand while with his left hand he's slipping something out of his pocket. The real conservative agenda is economic. I mean, that's 95% of the real conservative agenda is basically wipe out the middle class, transfer the assets of the middle class to the very wealthiest, and make the middle class more insecure and more afraid, so they'll take lower pay and they're less likely to unionize and all that sort of thing. And they throw them a little bit of we've got God on our side stuff, you know, or oh, we're against gay marriage kind of stuff. And I think very well-meaning people who really are concerned about the future of the nation, I would say true patriots, buy this hook, line, and sinker, because they are not getting the whole story. And the media is not giving them the whole story, and certainly the cons aren't giving them the whole story. And they end up voting against their own economic self-interest in what they believe is their religious self-interest. And then you see that these guys who portray themselves as religious heroes, you know, like Newt Gingrich, who delivered to his second wife on her deathbed as she was recovering from cancer surgery that she ultimately died from, he delivered his divorce papers to her because he was having an affair with his secretary. Or Livingston, you know, the guy who prosecuted Bush in the House of Representatives, had to step down because Larry Flint outed the fact that he'd been getting it on with his secretary on his desk in the office. You know, I mean, it's like
I've seen it firsthand too with my sister. She's a social worker, and she was really torn by who she should vote for, and a lot of it was the abortion issue. And she really, I think she's going to vote for Kerry now because she's realized that that is a wedge issue that they're trying to distract everybody with.
Yeah.
And she's going with her more social and economic values. That's outweighing her, you know, her moral.
Yeah.
Because you really have to go with the whole picture. You can't just go with one little issue.
I agree.
And there's the whole, you know, there's a lot of other topics that are just as important.
So. I agree. And with the abortion issue, the right wing has done a very good job of spinning the debate away from where it was in the 70s and 80s and early 90s, which is viability. Nobody I know, no rational person would ever support aborting a fetus that could live outside the womb. You know, it's just beyond imagination. And most states make it illegal. You know, you can get an abortion in the first trimester, sometimes somewhere into the second trimester. But if that baby is viable, you know, that you cannot abort it. And the third trimester abortions, this partial birth abortion thing, that happens maybe 12, 13, 14, 15 times a year in the United States. And in every single one of those cases, it happens because if it doesn't happen, the mother dies. And you have to make a choice, you know, do you want to save the baby or the mother? And the choice is, let's save the mother. She can produce another baby. And, you know, like that. And it's just but it's a very difficult issue. But the cons kind of spin it like, you know, as if the law allowed, which it doesn't, and pro-choice advocates are in favor of, which they're not, the ability to abort a viable fetus. It's just, it's... But,
my,
you know,
my sister gets very frustrated because she's like, why can't there be Democrats that are pro-life, you know, or why is
well,
it cut and dry, you know? But, of course, you don't hear about them as much or, you know, the Republicans don't want you to hear about them or I don't know. She's just been very frustrated by the whole thing, you know, and I just don't think of it as a cut and dry subject. It's just not black and white. There's a lot of shades
well,
to that.
Well, you're right, and it's not. And I mean, even George W. Bush himself, when he was in his early 20s, got a girlfriend pregnant and paid for an abortion for her. I mean, this is fairly well documented.
Yep.
Of course, that was back when abortion was illegal. But you know, the reality is that this is just a wedge issue. It's just, you know, this is the country is not going to turn on this. A and B. While the Republican Party, by and large, is saying, hey, if a woman is pregnant and her pregnancy is endangering her life, let the woman die. I mean, that's ultimately the position of their platform. And the Democratic Party are saying, no, let's save the life of the woman, even if it means losing the fetus. You will find Democrats and Republicans who cross over on that. I mean, this is not monolithic, and it's not a litmus test. At least in the Democratic Party, it's not a litmus test. But we digress. Thanks for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Great to hear from you, Angela. 1-866-889-8894. John in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I was noticing, you know, the big terrorism alert thing they announced yesterday.
Yeah, how could you miss it?
Yeah. Just from watching, you know, some of the cable networks and the major media, to me the obvious question that they never ask is, was this announcement even necessary? Why make the announcement?
Yeah.
Like, what, you know, what is it going to do if, are we supposed to, you know, keep our eye out for Middle Eastern men driving U-Haul trucks? Or, you know, what's the deal, basically?
Yeah, there was no, here's what you can do. Now, there's really two parts to one of these increases in color alerts, and at some level, at one level, I relatively agree with having these levels. When you go from the mid-level or any of the lower levels, where basically everything is normal, to one up, which is orange, then police suddenly have to start working overtime. Fire has to work overtime. There's a different level of vigilance that happens in the social infrastructure, the local infrastructure. Certain amounts of federal money become available to companies that have toxic waste or toxic products, nuclear power plants, things like chemical factories. There's a ramping up of security. But all of that is stuff that's invisible to you and me. And so my question is, if they're going to increase the alert level, why do they have to tell the public if they're not going to ask the public to do anything? And that's where it gets into, well, the only possible reason then can be to scare the heck out of people. Because they're not saying, here's what we would like you to do. They're saying, be more vigilant. Well, come on. They've been saying, I mean, anybody who has been anything other than comatose since 9/11 knows to be vigilant. And so it's, campaign politics. I frankly am convinced that this was, hey, Kerry's getting bounced from the election. Kerry is, there's this phenomena that has not been seen in American politics since the 1930s with Franklin Roosevelt, which is literally tens of thousands of people showing up for Kerry rallies, whereas Bush and Cheney rallies are, you know, just rallying the faithful, the people with the Republican cards. And they don't want that in the news. They didn't want that in the news. And so, let's roll this thing out. I mean, they could have just as easily have said very quietly and in the background to the police agencies, hey, here's what we've got. Here's the information. Let's do something about this. They didn't.
Yeah.
So
I'm looking at the New York Times, and there's a brief quote Howard Dean made yesterday.
Uh-huh.
He says, it's just impossible to know how much of this is real and how much of this is politics, and I suspect there's some of both of it.
Yeah. Well, essentially, that's what I'm saying. It's just that they're using what's real. What probably is real, and see, this is, they're using what's real for political purposes, and they're also helping to set up the big lie. The big lie being which has been promulgated by the talking heads, the right wing talk shows, the folks like former Enron lobbyist Ed Gillespie when he gets on TV shows, and the other Enron lobbyists who now head the Republican National Committee. They get these guys on and they say, you know, quack quack quack, and the subtext to what they're saying is the terrorists want Kerry in. Or the terrorists are afraid of Bush, like, you know, Bush is... And the reality is the opposite. The terrorists are having a better time than they have ever had in their lives because George Bush is screwing things up so badly. His fumbling with the whole situation in Iraq, his invoking religious imagery in the context of wars against Muslims. It's an absolute disaster. So it's and we should not allow it to stand unchallenged. John, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. John, Dearborn, Michigan, listening on WSDS. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, how you doing today?
I am great. What's up?
I just wanted to make a couple comments. One, I agree with you wholeheartedly on.
Okay, we got about a minute and a half, by the way, John.
Okay, really quickly, Ron from Arizona, about the papers. You said they had a left wing and a right wing.
Yeah.
And you agreed, in your statement was that it was unusual for that to happen in the town.
And I think it's a healthy thing.
And I agree with you. Unfortunately, predominantly, the entire media, newspaper, radio, is predominantly far left-wing.
You really think so?
I pick up any Detroit newspaper. So you got the Free Press, which is far left, and the Detroit News, which is medium left.
Maybe we have to redefine terms here, John. What do you mean by left?
Liberal.
What do you mean by liberal?
Giving everything away for everybody for free, and that was my next point.
Giving everything away to everybody for free?
Oh, yeah. And that's my next point. When you brought up just a few minutes ago about the Republicans are strictly for the wealthy and they want to take money out of the middle-class hands and promote wealth in the wealthy. Well, I'm a middle-class person.
John, hang on just a second. I'm gonna give you a few minutes after this break if you want to continue this conversation.
All right, it won't take long.
Okay, let me put you on hold. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 10 minutes before the hour.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war, and Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
A leading environmentalist says a growing gap between haves and have-nots is at the root of international terrorism. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Resentment is on the rise around the world, according to Paul Ehrlich, and it's directed at the world's wealthiest societies. Ehrlich and his wife Anne have written a new book called One with Nineveh. It argues that the growing gap between rich and poor countries is driving terrorism.
9/11 should have been more than catastrophic enough to open our eyes to dealing with the roots of terrorism. After all, we live in a world where something like 3 billion people live on $2 a day or less, while the average European cow is subsidized to a tune of $2.50 a day.
Ehrlich says he's not justifying acts of terrorism, but he says we should figure out what drives it. Most of the people drawn to terrorist groups come from desperately poor communities in places like Pakistan.
The basic root of terrorism, of course, is that many, many people are getting educated in poor countries but have no prospects for decent livings, and there are even more people who are not educated who basically just feel desperate and see the vast wealth of the rich countries, and that tends to enrage them.
Ehrlich says it's in our own interest to help fight poverty and disease in developing countries.
The gap between the rich and the poor, which is growing in the United States and between nations in many cases, is something we all should be concerned about, because remember, not only are the poor more susceptible to diseases that can move to us, but of course they also are now armed with nuclear weapons, with biological weapons, with chemical weapons, and so they are able to make lots of trouble for us, even if we thought it were ethical for us to continue to live high on the hog while they starve.
That's Paul Ehrlich, author of the new book, One with Nineveh. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman here with you. 4.5 minutes before the hour. And we were talking with John in Dearborn, Michigan, listening to WSDS. Hey, John. Okay. Great. You were saying that the media has a liberal bias. How do you account for the fact that 16 out of 18 newspaper, you know, major newspapers in the United States that made editorial endorsements for political office in the 2000 and 2002 cycles went Republican instead of Democrat?
The 2000 and 2002 cycles?
Right.
They went Democrat.
Right. Went Republican.
Oh, okay, you said Democrat, but that's okay. Yeah. Why they were Republican? Again, it goes back to my next point, where you had made a comment earlier that the Republicans want to take money out of the middle class hands and put it into big business. I view it this way. The Republicans, I will give you, they are for big business. But we just settled a contract, which was the most lucrative contract my company has ever settled in its history. Okay? Now, if Republicans are for big business, they do well, I do well. The Democrats, on the other hand, like to support the lower middle class and the poor people.
Well, hang on just a second. They do well, I do well. In the last 2 years, according to nobody who's partisan at all, okay, according to the Fed, right, Federal Reserve Board, in the last 2 years, 3 years actually, since early 2001 until today, the average wage of the average working person, adjusted for inflation, has gone down 9.2%. In that same period of time, corporate profits are up over 30%, and CEO compensation for the top 1,500 corporations in America is up over 45%. How does that mean they do well and you do well if your pay is going down 9.6%?
Well, I would, the only explanation I can offer, maybe my position is just an anomaly.
Sure.
It slipped through the cracks.
Well, obviously, you know, 82%.
Based on inflation right now, according to our contract and according to our union polls, we're like 2% above.
You're unionized.
Yes.
Well, hey, so you're in Fat City. You've got it. You're in a situation where you and the other people who are working with you have been able to balance the power of the corporation.
Correct. But let me make one other point right quick before we go.
Sure.
It only take 1 second.
Yep.
Now, the Democrats, on the other hand,
they go for, like I told you earlier, they go for the lower middle class and the poor people, which, to me, would I rather support a party that's for the big business that helps me out, or a party that supports the purple ripple drinking dude who sits, you know, maybe not by his choice, but sits on the corner? Who's going to help me out the best?
Well, I think, John, what you're doing is you're presenting a caricature here. My understanding of what the Democrats are about, and certainly what I'm about, is taking that purple ripple drinking dude and getting him a job. The best welfare system is a job.
They get him a job. He's just as capable as I am.
John, we're out of time. I'm sorry.
Hartman.com for
I'm sorry, John. That's
this program and more information.
We just done run out. John, give me a call a little later on, and we will carry this on. This is Tom Hartman.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. California builders and contractors aren't too happy with Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's decision to allocate $3.8 million of the state's new budget to a labor studies institute at the University of California. The Institute for Labor and Employment was started by former Governor Gray Davis to provide policymakers with information regarding trends in the state's labor force, such as the value of city living wage laws. The Golden Gate chapter of the Associated Builders and Contractors of California was hopeful Schwarzenegger would follow through with his campaign promise to kill the institute. But pressure from the California Labor Federation forced the governor to maintain funding.
On Friday, the U.S. agreed to make a 20% cut in some of the $19 billion in subsidies paid to American farmers each year. The agreement came during the around-the-clock talks with other members of the World Trade Organization. The cuts include subsidies for corn, cotton, rice, wheat, and soybeans. Some West African countries have claimed that American cotton subsidies have had a devastating effect on thousands of farmers in their countries. The trade talks imploded in 2001 when the U.S. and European Union refused to address the subsidy concerns of poorer nations.
A union of East Coast grocery workers meets with a federal mediator today to try to hash out a labor agreement with grocery giant Shaw's Supermarkets. If a deal can't be reached for the 39 union stores in southeastern Massachusetts and Rhode Island, about 6,000 employees are set to strike this week. Shaw says it won't budge from its final offer, which includes a 27% cut in benefits and raises insurance copays without increasing wages.
Workers in Athens are still threatening to strike during the Olympics. Hotel workers, drivers, and paramedics have been warning the government about the impending strike for more than 2 months. They are demanding bonuses for the increased stress they will endure during the Games. The problem? No money. The budget for the Games has already spiraled above the proposed budget. The hotel strike is set to begin next Thursday. The right to strike is a valued democratic right in Greece, and the government is concerned about the potential fallout if an emergency decree is issued making walkouts illegal.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Pirates don't just exist in movies. According to a report released by the British Maritime Bureau, pirates have killed more people in the first 6 months of this year than during the same period any other year in the past decade. 30 people have been killed so far in 2004 compared to 16 last year. The most dangerous waters are off the coast of Nigeria, followed by Indonesia, Vietnam, Bangladesh, and the Philippines.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Good news, Americans. The Crawford Five are free. As I reported to you earlier this year, five Texans were victims of one of the most bizarre incidents in George W.'s ongoing autocratic assault on America's most basic liberty, the right to dissent and protest. With a hardy troop of about 100 others, these five citizens were on their way to a peaceful war protest at Bush's ranchette outside the town of Crawford, Texas. As their car caravan proceeded through Crawford to get to George's place, however, they were halted by an impromptu police barricade erected by Chief Donnie Tidmore. The chief told the group they could not protest in Crawford because they had no permit. "But wait," they said, "we don't plan to protest here in town. We're just passing through." They might as well have tried reasoning with a rock wall, for Tidmore was impervious to logic, saying that by driving cars containing protest signs into his town, they were engaged in a de facto demonstration. And he reminded them firmly, they had no permit for that. It was Catch-22 meets Barney Fife. Five of the group tried to talk sense to Donnie, but he was having none of it. So they were arrested, jailed, and later convicted by a Crawford jury for failing to obey Tidmore's order for them to turn around and leave town. Apparently, in Bush world, we the people have a constitutional right to assembly and free speech, but not the right to pass through Crawford to exercise those rights. But the Crawford Five refused to give in to the ludicrous law of Bush world, preferring the freedom-loving mandates laid down by America's founders. So they appealed. Gloriously, just after July 4th, the McLennan County judge presiding over the appeal dismissed all charges against the five and restored our First Amendment rights to their proper, preeminent place. This is Jim Hightower saying, stay vigilant, Americans. The forces of ignorance and arrogance are always out there to repress our liberties.
I'm sorry, there's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told. If you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
The man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends.
Excuse me.
Tom Hartman here with you, exposing the con in conservative, protecting America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. So much going on in the news. I assume you saw the report about Halliburton suing their retirees over health benefit cutbacks. This may be a piece of the great Medicare Act, which in which large corporations came to the Republicans and they said, You know, if everybody's qualified under Medicare, all our retirees under Medicare can get prescription drug coverage, then we don't really need to cover them anymore. And why don't you, but, you know, it's going to cost us some money to make this transition. So why don't you give us $18 billion and we'll continue to hold them on and we'll continue to pay for them and subsidize it and all that. And because otherwise we'll just dump them on Medicare. And so the government said, fine, we don't want you dumping them on Medicare. It'll break the bank there. It'd be a big hassle. And so here's your $18 billion. No problem. And the company said, oh, that's great. By the way, please write into that law that we're not required to keep our employees on pensions, even though we take your money. And, of course, Tom Scully and George Bush said, oh, that's fine. No problem. No problem. And off it goes. I got a Halliburton story here for you in a minute. However, first, we had Joe Trippi on this program first. It seems like it was a year and a half ago. I'm not sure exactly when it was. Sometime back when he first started working with the Howard Dean campaign, Joe Trippi, one of the great political minds of our era. And I am so pleased and honored to have him on. His work in presidential politics, he started out with Ed Kennedy in 1980, and Ted Kennedy, and his political work has continued with the campaigns of Walter Mondale, Gary Hart, Richard Gephardt, and, of course, Howard Dean. He's worked on more than 100 campaigns. He's helped elect city attorneys and governors, mayors, senators. He's a regular at MSNBC. He's been profiled in GQ, Fast Company, The New Republic, New York Times Magazine Review, or The New York Times Magazine, rather. And he has a new book out, which is fascinating. The Revolution Will Not Be Televised: Democracy, the Internet, and the Overthrow of Everything. Joe Trippi, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Great to be here, Tom.
Great to have you back here, Joe. When you started Howard Dean's 2004 campaign, you guys had about $100,000 in the bank and 432 people who had essentially contributed, who were the known supporters.
Signed up. 432 supporters.
432
Most of them had even given anything at that point.
Yeah, and within a year, you turned that into over a third of a million people, or about a third of a million people.
Yeah, 650,000.
Yeah, and $50 million.
Yeah, yeah. It was pretty amazing.
Well, what did you do differently than all of your predecessors that allowed that to happen? Or do you think it was the times that changed? Or both?
I think it's like all three. There are three things. I mean, first of all, times have changed a little bit, and the internet had become more mature, and which I think that's the reason I wrote the book is because I really believe the revolution will not be televised. It's going to happen because the internet lets us to connect together as Americans again. But it was that. It was I really had I really woke up in the middle of 1995 and thought it would be great to run a campaign that use the internet to let people get involved. And then third, we had Governor Dean, who had the difference between Howard Dean and the other guys is the other guys were all running around the country saying, look at me, aren't I amazing. Howard Dean would go to that podium every day and say, look at you, aren't you amazing, and you have the power to change things. And
yeah,
650,000 people joined up to do just that.
Yeah, and that's I am so resonant with your message. What I have been preaching on this program for 2 years now is get involved. Don't just vote. Get involved. And people say, well, the Democratic Party's corrupt. It's been taken over. I think I'm going to go to the Greens. And I say, you want the Democratic Party to change? Get inside it. Get involved with it. Become an infiltrator. And a lot of people are like, well, I don't know if that's possible. Well, actually, it is possible. And people like you have demonstrated that. And Howard Dean and Dennis Kucinich and others at the top and at the bottom. I mean, there's just the delegates and all these volunteers. By the way, if any of our callers, any of our listeners would like to call in and say hi to Joe Trippi or ask him any specific questions, our number is 1-866, one of those new toll-free, newfangled toll-free numbers, 1-866-889-8894. Why should someone who wants to become active in progressive politics pick your book out of there's just a pile of new Bush-bashing books and liberal books and history books and this. I mean, I've got two new books out this year. Why should somebody pick out your book? What's unique about the two? The Revolution Will Not Be Televised.
Well, I mean, I think there are plenty of books that bash Bush, and I like them. I buy them, yeah. But I think this book goes beyond that. It really talks about what we can do together to change the party, to change the country. And it's about not bashing, it's about doing. And in a lot of ways, it's what you've been trying to do on the show for the last 2 years. It's about really explaining to people why there's been this sea change, how the internet brings it about, and what how we can all connect with each other now to change the party from the inside out. I mean, that's really what the Dean campaign was literally a takeover of the Democratic Party from within itself. We came damn close to pulling it off, but it's going to happen. And if it doesn't happen, it will happen. You know, a third way will form, because now the American people have the way. Those that are disgruntled, who don't believe these two parties have served us well, can create their own community, their own party. I don't think that needs to happen, and particularly this year. I think, you know, my own view is this is the most important election in our lifetime, and we have to get Bush out of there. So I'm going to support Kerry and Edwards, even though I do have differences with them. But the book talks about what we can do between now and November to get rid of Bush, and two, what we can do after that to really change everything from the bottom up. One of the things I point out is that Napster was the real first sign of the internet's ability to let millions of people come together at the bottom, at the grassroots, and radically change something. I mean, the Napster was the bottom rising up and wreaking havoc on a top-down recording industry that lost touch with its consumers and the people.
Mm-hmm.
And Dean was just the first sign of this happening in our body politics. So I think, you know, that's what's important. The book is, you know, does tell the rise of the story of the Dean campaign, but more than that, it really goes beyond just the Bush bashing and says what you, it tells you, lets people know what we can do together to really change this mess that we're in.
Yeah, it's meta to something much larger. I got to tell you, it's amazing. People call this show and they are giddy when they have taken my advice and that of other people who are callers and actually joined their local Democratic Party and have discovered that just walking in the door and saying, I'm here and I want to join up and, you know, here's a $10 contribution or whatever, you know, which isn't even necessary, of course. I'd like to be. And then they start talking about things like, you know, don't you think we should be supporting instant runoff voting because we don't have proportional representation in the United States and it would open up, it would make the country more democratic. And they make a pitch and suddenly they've got their local Democrats going, huh, this is a good idea. And
right.
you guys never heard of single payer health care. You always thought it had to be done through the health insurance companies. You know, they're like leeches. We can get them out of the and people call up just like giddy, telling stories about how they have indoctrinated, right? How they have convinced local Democrats of the viability of what have during Harry Truman's time and Franklin Roosevelt's time were mainstream Democratic positions. But since Ronald Reagan shifted the country so far to the right, and the Democratic Party went with it, they're now considered progressive issues,
right.
And they're bringing them back to democracy. It's just absolutely wonderful. Joe, I've got a call here from Dave in Humboldt County, California for you. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Joe, I have a reality for you, and I hope you're aware of it, and if not, I'd like to try to make you aware of it. But are you? Do you know, have any idea of how much these high-tech government goons under Ashcroft played a part in each and every primary that we went into? Do you have any idea of how much of a role they're playing in affecting the polls that we're getting right now? They know how, no way, were the neocons going to let us have a real shot at a Dean or a Kucinich or somebody that would give us a real alternative. That wasn't going to happen, and they rigged it. Do you know that?
Yeah. Dave, I pushed the wrong button when I put you on, and I dumped Joe. I've got to say, in two years of doing this.
Did he hear my question?
He didn't. In 2 years of doing this, I've done that twice, and I blew it. And
Don't do anything to make me think you're part of the conspiracy now, Tom.
Rama is getting Joe back on the line right now. No, I'm part of a conspiracy. There's no doubt about it, Dave. It's just not the one that's out to get you. But Rama, it's got to be on line 6 if I'm going to be able to do this.
No, he called back.
Oh, he called back. He's on line 3. Okay, let me see if I can conference this then. I've never tried this before. Hang on just a second. We'll push the conference button. Push that. Joe, you there?
I sure am.
Okay, Dave, ask your question now. We got about 3 minutes left.
Did you get any part of it, Joe?
No, I got dropped as soon as you got on.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I'm
my
asking
fault,
you
that.
A tough one. It's a question of reality of the worst kind. Are you aware of just how much of a role Ashcroft's high-tech goons played in each and every primary. Are you aware of the amount of an impact they're having right now on all of the polls? They could not, by any stretch, afford to have us, the citizens, having a realistic chance for a dean or a Kucinich or anybody of that caliber.
So you're suggesting and asking Joe, Dave, if it's possible that even the polls are being tampered with by these guys and
the polls are being tampered with. I'm talking to somebody with some firsthand knowledge on it, as with the primaries. These guys invade wherever they feel the need to do so.
Okay. Hang on just a second here before you answer that, Joe. Oop, hang on. Okay, Joe.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I got to push buttons in a real funny way here because after I dropped you, we got you back on a line that I can't lock in, and so I got to take, you know. Anyhow, your answer. We got about a minute and a half before we got to take a break, but your thoughts
look,
on this.
Look, I think there are a lot of I'm not aware of what the caller is talking about, but I would say this. There's nothing that I believe these guys wouldn't do to take this election. Yeah. Nothing. They are out. Jefferson and Madison said that the time they feared the most was there would be a time in this country when economic power would try to seize political power in this nation.
Yes.
And I believe the Bush administration is that moment. And I believe these guys will stop at nothing to try to perpetuate their own wealth and power. That's why I got the book out there so fast. People need to know what's going on. They need to know what they specifically can do about it to make a difference. And I really hope in the next 90 days as many people will pick it up and spread it, you know, and hand it off to people, and let's get the word out there.
Yeah, Joe Trippi's book, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, Democracy, the Internet, and the Overthrow of Everything. I think it's a great bookend to David Brock's Blinded by the Right, because it just kind of fills in the circle. A marvelous book. Joe, stick around. We've got a couple more questions for you. We've got to take a break here. It's 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program helping you win the water cooler war. Stick around. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry. There's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told if you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD, and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost it.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
to discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Is the Tom Hartman Program.
Who for powder? Who for his greed? Who for his hunger?
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. We're talking with Joe Trippi, the guy who helped put Howard Dean on the map. Has been involved in a lot of political campaigns before that. One of America's, in my opinion, one of America's true political geniuses. He's got a new book out called The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, Democracy, the Internet, and the Overthrow of Everything, which you can find in any bookstore, online, Amazon, whatever you'd like. And Joe is with us. Joe, correct me if I'm wrong. You state in your book that our era is better described as an empowerment age rather than an information age, which was the metaphor that was most often used in the latter part of the 20th century.
That's right.
And you say that, I believe I'm quoting you, the Internet is no longer distributing information, it's distributing power. Can you talk
right
about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think we live in a top-down society. All our institutions are top-down, corporate, government, and parties. And they're all operate on an information as power structure, which is, by the way, why we get the FBI hoarding information about Al-Qaeda and not sharing it with the CIA, because it's about the FBI using that information to gain power within the security framework of the country, and the CIA does the same thing. Well, that, I mean, we can see what kind of what a top-down power is information has gotten us, and along comes this thing that distributes information democratically to any individual who can get on the net, and that means that if information is power and it's distributing it to all of us, it's not distributing information anymore, it's distributing power to the bottom, which gets back to suddenly we have this power to really change things. The bottom having power in a top-down society is an amazing thing, and that's why I point back again to Napster. That was the bottom gaining power over a top-down recording industry. Mm-hmm. I think you're not just going to see, that's what the book is now about. It's about what the Dean campaign really showed was that the bottom can rise up and change the Democratic Party from within itself or change our politics for the better. And I think the future is that very soon, 3 months, 6 months, a year from now, you're going to see that same kind of power used to stop a company from polluting or from misabusing workers or its power, because suddenly it's not just one letter to a CEO, it's 4 million Americans saying you're going to stop polluting or we're going to take your company down to
right.
its knees.
Right.
And we'll have the means and the way to connect to each other and spread the word about that company faster than the company can put the fire out. So I really believe that we're in a new era of empowerment, and that the Dean campaign was really only the second eruption of it, but that the American people can do we can accomplish a lot of things that we've been told we can't make a difference. We can make a difference now, and we can make a difference with each other and form a much better community.
You know, in,
make sure our voice is heard.
In the largest sense, I absolutely and totally agree with you, and it's what I preach on this program, that we wouldn't have had the women's suffrage movement if it hadn't been started bottom up, women's rights movement, the abolitionist movement, civil rights movement, the anti-war movement with regard to Vietnam. I mean, a lot of these real powerful agents for social change, and even things that moved Roosevelt. His Social Security didn't come out of a vacuum. These were the echoes of the populist and the progressive movements from the 1890s to the 1920s. But for example, we have this situation here where yesterday there was this phenomena that I think has never been seen before in American politics, where 10,000-20,000 people showed up, had to turn in their umbrella because of security to stand in the rain and listen to John Kerry, and it was like this huge upswelling that nobody expected. It was a big story, and it got completely preempted by a terror alert that was using information, it turns out, that came from before 9/11. And when we come right back from this break, I'd like you to address, you know, to what extent can the blogosphere, can the internet media actually take on traditional broadcast television when you've got Karl Rove playing the prince, you know, in Machiavelli, and playing the prince's advisor, and doing such an effective job of manipulating mainstream media news? And I know you have a great answer for that. If you could just hold that, we'll be right back. 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. California builders and contractors aren't too happy with Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's decision to allocate $3.8 million of the state's new budget to a labor studies institute at the University of California. The Institute for Labor and Employment was started by former Governor Gray Davis to provide policymakers with information regarding trends in the state's labor force, such as the value of city living wage laws. The Golden Gate chapter of the Associated Builders and Contractors of California was hopeful Schwarzenegger would follow through with his campaign promise to kill the institute. But pressure from the California Labor Federation forced the governor to maintain funding.
On Friday, the U.S. agreed to make a 20% cut in some of the $19 billion in subsidies paid to American farmers each year. The agreement came during the around-the-clock talks with other members of the World Trade Organization. The cuts include subsidies for corn, cotton, rice, wheat, and soybeans. Some West African countries have claimed that American cotton subsidies have had a devastating effect on thousands of farmers in their countries. The trade talks imploded in 2001 when the U.S. and European Union refused to address the subsidy concerns of poorer nations.
A union of East Coast grocery workers meets with a federal mediator today to try to hash out a labor agreement with grocery giant Shaw's Supermarkets. If a deal can't be reached for the 39 union stores in southeastern Massachusetts and Rhode Island, about 6,000 employees are set to strike this week. Shaw says it won't budge from its final offer, which includes a 27% cut in benefits and raises insurance copays without increasing wages.
Workers in Athens are still threatening to strike during the Olympics. Hotel workers, drivers, and paramedics have been warning the government about the impending strike for more than 2 months. They are demanding bonuses for the increased stress they will endure during the Games. The problem? No money. The budget for the Games has already spiraled above the proposed budget. The hotel strike is set to begin next Thursday. The right to strike is a valued democratic right in Greece, and government is concerned about the potential fallout if an emergency decree is issued making walkouts illegal.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Pirates don't just exist in movies. According to a report released by the British Maritime Bureau, pirates have killed more people in the first 6 months of this year than during the same period any other year in the past decade. 30 people have been killed so far in 2004 compared to 16 last year. The most dangerous waters are off the coast of Nigeria, followed by Indonesia, Vietnam, Bangladesh, and the Philippines.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
What was it you wanted? Tell me again so I know. What's happening in there? What's going on in your show?
And that's stuff you can find out on the internet, presumably. Find out what's going on with politics. You want to know what's going on with this show, TomHartman.com will tell you. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 27 and a half minutes before the hour, we're talking with Joe Trippi, the author of The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, Democracy, the Internet, and the Overthrow of Everything. And the man who put or helped put Howard Dean on the map. I'm sure Howard Dean would say that Howard Dean himself had something to do with it. But I visited his headquarters. I met this guy, and Joe Trippi is one of the great political geniuses of our era. So, Joe, in answer to this question, then we got a caller here, a couple of calls, and a couple more questions real quickly. How do you deal with the, you know, there's 92 days now to the election. There's no doubt in my mind that Karl Rove has 92 squares of paper on a wall someplace in the White House, and every single day they've got the story of the day planned, and they've probably got another dozen pieces of paper where they, you know, if anything happens untoward, if Kerry gets good publicity, whatever, that they can pull something out of the hat. Oh, hey, we just discovered this terrorist we've been sitting on for 3 months, and slap him on there. Every day they're going to have a way to grab the headlines, like they just pushed this incredible Kerry story off the headlines yesterday with the terror alert. How do you deal with that? Even though these things get talked about on the web, it's really not reaching most of mainstream America. Or am I wrong in that? Oh, there you go.
Thank you.
Sorry, Joe. You start over. I didn't have the button pushed.
I think it's reaching more people than we think. It really is over the water cooler at work and the neighbor's fence at home. And we need to start talking to each other again. And I think millions of Americans are starting to do. Guys are practicing the politics of fear. I mean, that's what that alert is. And the problem with that is it won't win out. I don't believe it'll work. I do think there's one thing I want to warn people about. I think that what they're doing with this, we may have to cancel the elections.
Right.
You know, that whole thing.
Yeah.
Is to put that out there, that they may have to cancel it and have people concerned about it. And I really believe that what people need to look out for on the morning of election days, they're not going to cancel the election. What they're likelier to do is phone a couple, maybe 10, 20 million Democratic households and tell them on the morning of the election that the election's been canceled and moved to the following Tuesday. And that there's no need to vote today.
So you're looking at a dirty trick on the level of what George Bush did to John McCain in South Carolina.
Exactly. I think that's what this is a setup for. I think we need to talk about these kind of things so that if people get those kind of calls, they've heard about it and said, no, I'm not. I mean, I'd rather have the Bush folks tell everybody I'm crazy than to not put the word out that these guys are capable of doing anything and that you need to reject this kind of politics.
Yeah, and this could be done. I mean, they have machines now that with an automated voice message can call 40, 50,000 people an hour.
Right, and they'll do it from India.
Yeah.
It'll be
untraceable.
It'll be offshore, and you won't be able to trace it, and I'm convinced that's what they're going to do.
That's incredible. That's Joe, your mind is so devious, even I had not thought of that. You've been hanging around with these guys. You know how they think.
No, I've just watched them. Fortunately, I watched them for 30 years, and that's why, again, it's why I wrote the book, because we have the ability now and the power to beat them. That's why they worked so hard to stop Dean and stop his campaign. And I really think that the net is there. It's a way for all of us to connect and exchange information and make a difference. And the book explains why it's happening and and how people can take advantage of it, and how we can make this country
better. Which raises another question for me. The Club for Growth dumped $1 million in Iowa with those latte-drinking, Volvo-driving liberals ads against specifically Howard Dean. What kind of impact did those ads have? Do you think that group, because they're cranking up a whole new set of ads against John Kerry, ridicule ads, basically, you know, a spinning weather vane and all this. To what extent did those ads really impact Howard Dean?
I think they hurt a lot. I mean, they put $1 million on. Of course, the whole time the Republicans were claiming that Howard Dean was their favorite candidate, but they were out there hammering us.
Yeah.
Dick Gephardt's ads really hurt the most because in Iowa, 65% of the caucus attenders are over the age of 65 years of age. So, I mean, you have a huge seniors population that votes in those caucuses, and his ads were all Howard Dean's going to steal your Medicare and ruin Social Security. I mean, a typical Republican attack or a Democratic attack on Republicans. It's the oldest trick in the book to scare seniors in the final days of a campaign. That one hurt, and then you had this other 527 committee, which is this new thing that we got out of campaign finance reform that's not working, which was a committee that was put together of Kerry and Gephardt funders attacking us as a gun nut.
Mm-hmm.
And so those three different groups were spending, you know, with all the money we had, we didn't have enough money to defend ourselves against three attacks.
Yeah, remarkable. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. If you have a question or comment for Joe Trippi, Raymond in Michigan's on the line. Hey, Raymond, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, listen, you know, this whole thing about power with respect to the Internet, one of the issues that concerns me that might interfere with that is this whole idea of access to the media, access to the Internet. As you see with the Telecommunications Act, you see what's happening, I believe, is the Arbox, for example, are trying to line up control of the market. And, of course, the government wants to make sure that there's a limited number of providers, so it has an opportunity to, you know, watch what's going on the network. And so I think that that's an area that is potentially very detrimental in that access to either a free Internet or access to independent media is going to be limited by the fact that those who control the access can throttle and can control the content that's made available. And so I think I agree with you with respect to power, but I'm concerned about the throttling of that access to that.
Yeah, Raymond, can I rephrase your question? It sounds to me like what you're asking is, does Joe see the Internet going the way broadcast network television has gone, with a few dominant players and everybody else getting marginalized, but perhaps by virtue of regulation?
Through the process of who's controlling the access to
Right, which would be by regulation. What are your thoughts,
Joe? I mean, that's what I said. You know, I really do believe we're at that moment where economic power is trying to seize political power in this country, and that's why we have to stop it right now, because the caller is right. If we don't use the power that we have today to get together and change this, he's right. Over time, we then face the very real prospect that they will then shut off, you know, that our access to the net will be controlled by a few entities as well, and that the content will be, you know, dictated by fewer and fewer players, and we'll lose the one tool we have to come together as Americans and use our collective power to change things. And I believe if Bush is in there for another 4 years, that could be the 4 years where this all happens. We have to, and I'm sorry I keep harping on it, but that's why I think this is the moment. This is the time when those 20,000 people who showed up for Kerry yesterday, when the hundreds of thousands that came on for Howard Dean that are out there right now for Kerry, we have a moment that Madison talked about, where the people have the tools to acquire the knowledge that this seizure is happening, and the tools that empower them to change it and take it on. He wrote something 208 years ago that you'd be hard pressed to find a better definition of the Internet than what Madison wrote 208 years ago. What we would need to thwart this seizure of economic power and political power in our country. It's there. That's what the book is about, and it's why we need to do it now.
Yeah, yeah, very straightforward. Joe, do you know, I noticed FDR's original run in 1932 for the presidency was on I think you could summarize his campaign slogan with three words, stay the course. That, you know, he was basically saying, okay, Smoot-Hawley has been passed by Herbert Hoover. We're trying to put up some protectionist barriers to protect our jobs here at home. We're trying to do the right thing here. We're trying to get the Fed involved and more active. And the Fed was a very new institution and didn't know how to deal with this thing. We're going to create a Securities and Exchange Commission. I'm going to put Joe Kennedy in charge of it, and he's going to crack down on corporate wrongdoing. But it was really stay the course. And yet within a year or two of his election, he turned into FDR, the guy who brought his Social Security and the Wagner Act in 1935, which directly led to the creation of a second middle class in the United States, the first one being agricultural-based from the 1700s and early 1800s and wiped out by the robber baron era. Do you think that John Kerry has the potential to be the next FDR?
I think so if we're there to help him be the next FDR. You know, if he puts a health care bill through on the docket. The problem today is that there's 33 lobbyists for every member of Congress that will kill it. Mm-hmm. The reason we don't have, you know, Truman had health care in the platform since 1948. There's a reason we don't have it. It's not because there haven't been some decent plans or good plans. It's because the powers that be, the lobbyists and the corporations, come out every time one's up there and scare the living daylights out of the American people with Harry Louise and all these other things. If Kerry puts that plan in, and there's 4 or 5 or 6 million Americans who've joined together over the Internet to make their voices heard when he puts that bill up, it's going to make the difference.
How can we get him to put up a bill that's a single-payer system that that basically kills off large chunks of the HMO and health insurance industry because they're just leeches on the body of the nation? They're going to fight for their not just for their profits now. We're talking about fighting for survival. Is it okay with you if he does some kind of program that still allows them to suck 10-20%, 30% out of our taxpayer dollars in this kind of system?
Well, no, I think what prevents it is that right now, because of the way money pervades our system, I'm talking about electing guys.
Mm-hmm.
Their power, their checks overpower ours.
Yeah,
that's changed. I mean, the Dean campaign changed that. John Kerry has $182 million. It's a lot of money, but it came from 1.6 million people and an average contribution of $108.
Yeah, but still have all the 527s out there, and perhaps worse, we still have Boston versus Bilotti, you know, the 1978 Supreme Court decision. That, it seems to me, is what really needs to be reversed for any of this to work.
But we're going to be campaign finance reform. I mean, I really believe this. Good people, McCain and Feingold, try to change the rules. They'll always find loopholes. We have to be campaign finance reform. We have to be there, 7, 6, 8, 9, 10 million of us saying we want health care, we want this system of health care,
Yeah. And
you're going to support it or we're going to throw you out of office. And before, it was just one voice or a few voices or some rallies. Now it's we have the ability to connect all the Americans, all the people in this country who want health care, and make their voice heard. And the Dean, like I said, the Dean campaign was a small infant step in this. It's going to be, you know, just like McCain, you look at them in 2000, McCain was the big Internet candidate. 40,000 people signed up for him.
Yeah.
3 years later, Howard Dean comes along, 650,000 people. We can grow to 4, 5, 6 million people and keep growing and demand what we want. We don't have to take this system anymore, and we can overpower the 33 lobbyists for every member of Congress. We can do that. We are what members of Congress understand when we flex our muscle. The advantage they and the special interests had was that we could never join together in a sizable force.
Right, now we can. Now we can with the web. 1-866-889-8894. Susan in Santa Cruz, California is on the line. Hey, Susan, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Great. You're live with Joe Trippi.
Yes, and Joe, Okay, what I want to say is, if anything scares me at all, it's that we have a society that has so many people with that mentality that they can do this stuff and get away with it, that they do have people who would call a million people and call off an election. You know, that there's a bullying mentality that goes on here, and that's frightening to me. Any thoughts about what you do about that?
Well, what's more frightening is that over 40 years, most Americans have come to believe that they cannot, as an individual, can make a difference. And that's why progressives lost the playing field over time. Too many people just came to believe they were the only one. I mean, there were a lot of people who thought they were the only one against the war, that they were one of the few that thought things were wrong. And this awakening's happened where, and the Dean campaign really had a lot to do with this, where all of a sudden all these people out there realized they weren't the only one, that there were hundreds of thousands of us, millions of us, who didn't think things were right. And that they, we knew that our $25 check by itself couldn't mean it, do anything against this system. But what we've all learned now is that if 650,000 of us who believe that do a little something,
big
if we grow to
happen.
2 million, we can make a huge difference. We turned this party upside down. We really did.
Right.
Yeah, you can make a difference maybe in the election or whatever, but how do you get to changing the attitudes of people? I mean, I don't think that that what I do in the world is meaningless. You know, I feel that there's power in what I do and in what anybody does.
I'm telling you, there are so many people who do not. That's why people don't vote.
I understand that, but why, do you think that these people then gravitate towards the people they think have the power? Is that the idea?
Yeah, I mean, let me tell you what happened in the Dean campaign. We sent
got about a half a minute here, Joe.
Okay.
Huh?
You got about a half a minute before you got to take a break. We can wrap it up on the other side of the break, but just
we had 99,000 people that we sent emails to saying, give some money, help us. 59,000 people did it. Those 59,000 knew they had done a big change. The amazing thing was the other 40,000 people said, I'm going to do it next time because I saw what you guys did.
There you go.
So
the example was energizing to people.
Right.
Joe, I got one more real important question for you. If you can stick around for another 4 or 5 minutes here, we got to take a quick break. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war. And Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner bringing you today's feature story. Recently, a group of workers gathered in the Garment District in New York City to launch the Ain't I a Woman campaign, a national boycott against Liberty Apparel. Rebecca Miles was there.
The campaign demands that the manufacturer be accountable to their subcontracted workers. In 1999, 26 garment workers sued Liberty Apparel for sweatshop conditions in their U.S. contracted factories and failure to pay minimum wage. Many workers, when paid, were earning $3 an hour. Anna Chong from the Ain't I a Woman campaign.
It's been 5 years. For 5 years, they still refuse to pay their workers. Their kids are grown and they have not received a single cent. By not paying these workers, they're actually trying to change the law. They're actually trying to change the Fair Labor Standards Act. And because this will affect workers across the country, this boycott is also about holding all manufacturers accountable and all companies that subcontract accountable, and for them to stop hiding behind the subcontracting system.
What concerns workers is the increase in subcontracting, especially where subcontractors are not accountable when accidents happen on the job, or where the company suddenly disappears when there is any kind of protest, as in the case of Liberty Apparel and its subcontractor. David Ting, a high school student whose mother worked long hours in a nail salon.
The subcontracting system, it's not limited to the garment industry. White-collar workers such as lawyers and paralegals are employed through temp agencies. And although they are well paid, they have absolutely no control of their working hours and may work for years without contract.
We were unable to contact Liberty Apparel Company as the line was constantly busy. Their clothing line is sold in outlets like Conway and Family Dollar for families on tight incomes. And ironically, is durable clothing for workers and hunters. For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Rebecca Miles in New York.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
It's Tom Hartman with you 4.5 minutes before the hour. We're talking with Joe Trippi, author of The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, Democracy, the Internet, and the Overthrow of Everything. Campaign manager for the Howard Dean campaign in his long, illustrious, and extraordinary career. Joe, just a quick question. We one of the kind of underreported stories coming out of the Democratic National Convention, although it was reported, was the amount of corporate cash that was sloshing around all these fancy parties and all this sort of thing. When I look back at the history of Democratic victories in the 20th century, it seems to me that Roosevelt didn't begin winning elections by landslides until 36, and when, 36 and 40, when he came out openly in favor of extremely progressive social policy, the Wagner Act, the creation of Social Security, the WPA, and that LBJ won his landslide victory basically on the idea of a war on poverty. We shouldn't, you know, it's a moral failing of America that we have children who are hungry, and his pro civil rights position. You could argue to what role Bobby Kennedy had in that and all that kind of thing, but nonetheless, all the other Democratic victories have been more or less squeakers, and it seems to me that Bill Clinton's wins had less to do with his policies and more to do with the fact that he was a good politician. Do you think that the Democratic Party, by kind of running to the center, is shooting itself in the foot? And B, what influence, and this is perhaps the larger question, we've only got about a minute and a half here left, what influence does the Democratic Leadership Council, these new Democrats, the kind of Republican light part of the Democratic Party, having on all this, and any chance that we can get rid of that?
Well, it's the DLC tried to shape this party, actually succeeding in shaping it, and what we got was a party, get this, there's only one category in fundraising we lead, and that's in contributions over $1 million or more. In other words, the Democratic Party leads in only one funding category, contributions of $1 million or more. It's abysmal, and it's wreaking havoc on a party that was supposed to be the party of working people and of average Americans in the middle class. So what the Dean campaign, this revolution that I'm talking about, is the one that's happening right now within the party. Hundreds of thousands of people giving $10, $25, we're weaning this party off its addiction on $1 million contributions. And that's, again, I think, what the future holds if we as Americans understand our power and work together to achieve it.
Great. Well said. Joe Trippi, the book, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, in bookstores near you. Check it out. Joe, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Hopefully we'll talk again soon. Do good, Joe. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. California builders and contractors aren't too happy with Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's decision to allocate $3.8 million of the state's new budget to a labor studies institute at the University of California. The Institute for Labor and Employment was started by former Governor Gray Davis to provide policymakers with information regarding trends in the state's labor force, such as the value of city living wage laws. The Golden Gate chapter of the Associated Builders and Contractors of California was hopeful Schwarzenegger would follow through with his campaign promise to kill the institute. But pressure from the California Labor Federation forced the governor to maintain funding.
On Friday, the U.S. agreed to make a 20% cut in some of the $19 billion in subsidies paid to American farmers each year. The agreement came during the around-the-clock talks with other members of the World Trade Organization. The cuts include subsidies for corn, cotton, rice, wheat, and soybeans. Some West African countries have claimed that American cotton subsidies have had a devastating effect on thousands of farmers in their countries. The trade talks imploded in 2001 when the U.S. and European Union refused to address the subsidy concerns of poorer nations.
A union of East Coast grocery workers meets with a federal mediator today to try to hash out a labor agreement with grocery giant Shaw's Supermarkets. can be reached for the 39 union stores in southeastern Massachusetts and Rhode Island. About 6,000 employees are set to strike this week. Shaw says it won't budge from its final offer, which includes a 27% cut in benefits and raises insurance copays without increasing wages.
Workers in Athens are still threatening to strike during the Olympics. Hotel workers, drivers, and paramedics have been warning the government about the impending strike for more than 2 months. They are demanding bonuses for the increased stress they will endure during the Games. The problem? No money. The budget for the Games has already spiraled above the proposed budget. The hotel strike is set to begin next Thursday. The right to strike is a valued democratic right in Greece, and the government is concerned about the potential fallout if an emergency decree is issued making walkouts illegal.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Pirates don't just exist in movies. According to a report released by the British Maritime Bureau, pirates have killed more people in the first 6 months of this year than during the same period any other year in the past decade. 30 people have been killed so far in 2004 compared to 16 last year. The most dangerous waters are off the coast of Nigeria, followed by Indonesia, Vietnam, Bangladesh, and the Philippines. You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
What do Kalamazoo, Evansville, Albuquerque, Stockton, Phoenix, Columbia, St. Louis, and Charleston have in common? They're some of the cities where the Secret Service or police have jailed people for displaying anti-Bush signs during public appearances by His Eminence King George W. Is this America, the land of the free? That's what Nicole and Jeff Rank asked themselves this July 4th as they were taken away in handcuffs by police in their town of Charleston, West Virginia. What was their heinous crime? They were guilty of not being Bush supporters. George W.'s Independence Day trip to Charleston was billed as an official presidential visit, not a campaign rally. Nicole and Jeff, two patriotic, hard-working, taxpaying Americans, were in the crowd, quietly exercising their free speech rights. They wore T-shirts declaring, "Love America, hate Bush." They had proper tickets to the event. They proudly sang the national anthem with everyone else. They were in no way disorderly, but they were not politically correct, so they were summarily arrested, taken to jail, fingerprinted, and charged with trespassing. Others who were there wearing pro-Bush T-shirts and Bush campaign paraphernalia at this public event on public property were not arrested. It seems that the Bushites define trespassers by their political beliefs. Nicole, who worked for the Federal Emergency Management Agency in Charleston, was promptly told that her services were no longer required. Technically, she wasn't fired, but she was released from her job and not reassigned, meaning she no longer gets paid. This is Jim Hightower saying, but Nicole and Jeff are still not bowing to King George. They're fighting Bush's absurd, un-American assault on their constitutional right to dissent. They're not the only ones being denied their right to speak out. Dissenters all across America are being treated like this. To fight this autocratic lockdown, call the ACLU, 212-549-2500.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just from making your first 6 payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold-hearted cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George W.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Joe Trippi, in that interview in the last hour, made some great comments. It is time for us to take back our democracy. And the way it's going to happen is not just people sitting up showing up in the voting booths and in the polling places. I mean, that's an important key to it. But volunteering to participate in the political party of your choice, be it the Republicans, Democrats, Greens, Progressives, Independents, Libertarians, whatever it may be, volunteer to participate in the political party of your choice. Get out there. Get active. Start talking to your friends and neighbors. Spread the word. Get educated, which you're by and large not going to get from the evening news. You know, for all the right-wingers ranting about the liberal bias of the mainstream media, the fact of the matter is that the main bias of the mainstream media is money. It's what kind of story will get the highest viewership so that we can sell our advertising for the greatest amount of money. And that's why you see so much of, Lacey Peterson. And if it has to do with sex, if it has to do with violence, if it has to do with something lurid, you can bet it'll be there. And at the same time, who's talking about the fact that a million people are almost certainly going to die now in the Sudan because this administration doesn't have the time to bother with it? Who's talking about the fact that we're hitting a worldwide Hubbert peak, the midway point of the supply of oil, when it becomes so expensive, increasingly expensive to pump oil out, that the oil prices are going to explode? I'm telling you, we're going to see. Oil yesterday was at an historic high, $44 a barrel. It had spiked there once before, about 20 years ago, as a result of some funky stuff. But this is not a spike as a consequence of the Gulf War. This is or any other specific event. This is a structural issue. You can expect to see, and those of you who are investors, you can figure out the consequences of this. You can expect to see $50 a barrel oil within 2 years and $100 a barrel of oil by the end of this decade. Mark my words. And that's going to mean gasoline at $3, $4, $5 a gallon in the United States, the same as it is in Europe. And interestingly, Europe goes along just fine, thank you very much, with oil at $5 a gallon. How do they do that? Well, they use one-seventh as much oil on a per-person basis, which doesn't just include driving. Their houses are more efficient. They use more public transportation. They use fewer disposables, which are made out of plastic, which are made out of oil. They recycle more. They use the average European, the average Western European, the average, first world European, uses one-seventh the amount of energy the average American does. And you're going to see this, we are hitting the wall. This is what M. King Hubbert, the oil scientist back in the 1950s, predicted would happen. He died in the late 70s. He predicted the United States would hit its Hubbert peak, the halfway point, in 1970. It actually happened in 1974. We had the oil shocks and the oil price increases. And that's when the United States stopped being oil independent and started having to import oil in significant quantities, simply because we had no other choice other than conservation, which other than a brief, maybe 2.5-year period during the Carter administration where we really made an effort, nobody at the national level has seriously talked about these things. So we have this policy just absolutely driven by oil. And what are we going to do? Are we going to continue conquering countries that have oil? Is Saudi Arabia next or Iran? Is that a rational way to go about it? To pay for it with the blood of our young men and women and the treasure of our nation? If we simply eliminated the exemption for SUVs from fleet mileage standards and then raised the CAFE standards, the fleet mileage standards for all the automobile fleet in the United States by 3 miles per gallon, if we just did those two simple things, which are both doable, we would eliminate the need to import any oil from the Middle East at all. Period. Don't have to have a war anymore. Don't have to come up with lies and rationals. They just don't have to do it. I mean, it is so very straightforward. And you know, as I started out to say, you know, you're not going to hear this discussion. You're not going to learn about this stuff by and large from the mainstream media, from the corporate owned media. I mean, General Electric owns NBC. General Electric, one of the largest defense contractors in the country. You think they're going to tell you about why it's not good to have a war when every time we have a war, they make a fortune? I don't think so. Call me a cynic, but I'm sorry, I don't think so. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to call in. Kent in Humboldt, Texas?
No, it's Humboldt, Texas.
Oh, yeah, a humble Texan. It's nice to hear about.
Well, I can say I'm a humble man. Nobody can deny it, but
that's
the only joke I know.
There you go.
It's not even good. Listen, you know, I've been listening to this, listening to this terrorism alert on news this morning.
Yeah.
And the thing that bothers me the most about this incessant switch that the Republicans seem to do on this, I'm 57, and I grew up in the middle of the Vietnam protests, and I lived through and experienced the Weathermen,
mm-hmm.
I'm reading my little list here, the Minutemen, the Black Panthers, the Symbionese Liberation Army, complete with television photos of Patty Hearst holding up a bank, Angela Davis, burning the cities of Los Angeles and Detroit and parts of Chicago, New York City, as I remember, Kent State, 4 people killed there. I mean, Jackson, the song.
Well, people died in the inner city riots too, in the fires.
Well, you're right, and I forgot about that. Thank you. And how many died at Jackson State? Was that 6?
I don't recall.
Yeah. National Guard, I couldn't get on my campus without having an ID card. You get arrested. I mean, just walking across the place. I grew up in Arizona. They brought out the National Guard and set up machine gun emplacements in Morenci, Arizona during a mine strike. I can't believe, I'm supposed to feel terror about somebody that might actually attack a financial district. I mean, it's just destroying me. I truly believe, and this, I guess, where I'm going, that this is either the biggest con I've ever seen or that Richard Nixon needs an apology, because I think he did a much better job of dealing with terror than in a bigger war issue than George Bush did.
Well, let's just say that both are true. I mean, Bush is playing an old card. When Adolf Hitler, and for, let me say, first of all, Bush is not Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler is in his own class. Bush has not killed, 6, 10, 12 million people. I don't mean to say that the horrors of Hitler in his later years.
No, excuse me, sir, but
Bush.
You know, where you're right, though, is we look at that backside. He didn't kill 6 million, but nobody thought Hitler was going to do that either.
Yeah, exactly right. And when in 1932, February 28th, 1932 or 33, 33 it was, February 28th, 1933, Marius van der Lubbe, the 28-year-old Dutch, some would say mentally retarded or schizophrenic fellow who claimed to be a Dutch communist. He had tried to set 4 or 5 buildings on fire in Berlin by taking rags, soaking them in oil, and setting them next to brick buildings, which didn't do anything. And, but the police were on to him. And many historians suggest that they helped him out a little when he finally got to the Reichstag, brought him inside and said, try the curtains, that might work a little better. And he set the Parliament building, the equivalent of the United States Capitol, the German equivalent of the United States Capitol, on fire. And as that building was burning into an ember, collapsing within, Adolf Hitler showed up in front with the press. He called a press conference, all the radio reporters, along with von Papen and Hindenburg, who he'd been having dinner with. And here's this guy who was not the legitimate leader of Germany, but wanted to be. He wanted Hindenburg to appoint him chancellor. And Hindenburg had been resisting fiercely because his Nazi party only had a small minority, 20-some-odd, high 20s% in the parliament. And Hitler said, "This is a sign of God, a sign from God. We shall not allow these terrorists to conquer our nation. We will fight back. We declare a war on terrorism here and now." And he went in this long rant about this and how these terrorists... And over the next few days, he elaborated it. The first day, he blamed it entirely on the communists. Within 5 days, he was blaming it on communists who came from the Middle East and were motivated by their religion, specifically Jews rather than Muslims. But, some similar parallels there. And within a month, he had passed the Act for the Protection of Patriotic Germans, which suspended habeas corpus, gave police power to wiretap, gave the police power to open people's mail, gave people power for sneak and peek provisions, and there were still in the parliament several libertarians who were horrified by this and are totally opposed to it. And Hitler argued that because they were in a war against terror, they had to have this, but in order to satisfy these guys, they'd put a 4-year sunset provision on it, and if the state of emergency had been lifted within 4 years, they would kill the law. And, of course, Hindenburg made him chancellor, and boom, that's history was born. And George Bush really, consciously or unconsciously, you know, there's probably Dave, our psychologist friend out there in Humboldt County, would say that, you know, the Jungian archetype, you know, he pulled it out of the ether. But Bush is playing that card. You know, there's a terrorist act, and so you turn it into something bigger than life, and you generalize it across everything, and you use it as the excuse for everything. And it's a very, very, you know, strong way to get power. Clinton could have done that with Tim McVeigh's bombing of the Oklahoma City building, because there are white supremacist groups all over America that actually do have weapons. We busted one in Texas just 5 months ago. This guy had enough stuff to blow up major buildings. I mean, he could have brought down a small skyscraper in New York City. He had tons of explosives.
You're right. But why, I mean, you see, I mean, the great overview on this thing. Why should I feel terror about, you know, the Middle East potential threat? I mean, they're not even here. As opposed to, we already lived through the worst elements of it.
Yeah, well, that's the
Americans
point.
Doing terrorism to America.
That's the point. And it will surprise me if nothing more comes. I mean, I would not be at all surprised if the terrorists had a few suitcase nukes and sent them off in a couple of cities and created panic, or if they blew up a nuclear power plant, or if they got to a couple of chemical plants, and you know, so they kill another 1,000 people, or another 5,000, another 10,000. We lose 50,000 people a year in the United States to drunk driving. I mean, it's important to put things.
65,000 by handgun. Guns or something like that.
Yeah, it's important to put these things in context. And it's, you know, is it worth losing our civil liberties over, number one? And number two, the big lie that the Bush administration has promulgated, they hate us for our freedoms. Every time I hear that, I want to just run up to the TV and reach through and grab whoever says it by the lapel and say, they hate us for our foreign policy. If, you know, if they hated us for our freedoms, they would be bombing Norway. Norway has more freedoms than the United States in many regards. It's got nothing to do with our freedoms. And Osama bin Laden has said it very clearly. They hate us because we had troops on Saudi soil, because we're in bed with a corrupt Saudi royal family and other royal families all around the Middle East, and because we're supporting Israel. And it's just so simple, and they try to boil it down to these lies, and it's destructive.
You're right. I agree with you. I'm a petroleum engineer. I have spent most of my life outside this country, and I come back in the country, I'm overwhelmed by not only the lack of knowledge of what's going on in the world, but also just the place the U.S. has in it.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do when you have Americans that can't name the provinces in Canada, you know, They're trying to make policy decisions in Iraq.
I agree, Kent. We're out of time, but
good
point.
I appreciate your time.
Good point. Keep spreading the good word and keep listening.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry. There's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told if you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Oh, it's a terrible pun. But we are. We're stuck between a rock and a hard place. 25 minutes past the hour. 24 and a half, actually. For those of you who are precise to the second. Tom Hartman here with you. Our program today brought to you by the Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research. Their website is CASCR.org. By futurist Benjamin Krim. You can call for an audio tape, 888-242-8272. And Small Dog Electronics, one of our favorite sponsors, been with us for a long time. 1-800-511-MAX, 511-MACS. Give them a call for all things Macintosh. We're also sponsored by In These Times magazine and The Progressive. Last week I mentioned that a campaign worker for President George Bush said on last Thursday, that American workers unhappy with low-quality jobs should either find new ones or pop a Prozac to make themselves feel better. In fact, here's how Reuters wrote it up. Susan Schiavone, an assistant to Bush campaign spokesman Terry Holt, said, quote, "Why don't they go get new jobs if they're unhappy or go on Prozac?" Well, when I presented the story, I stopped it at that point. It was a late-breaking story at that point, and I frankly hadn't read it all the way to the end. As we go on into the story, we discover the comment was apparently directed to a colleague who was transferring a phone call from a reporter asking about job quality and who overheard the remark. So when told the Prozac comment had just been overheard, she said, "Oh, I was just kidding." So apparently this is, what the Bush campaign says off the record but not on the record. And so this is not an on-the-record comment, and I apologize if I characterized it as such, just to keep things straight here. We've got a call. We've got go to the phone lines here for just a moment. 1-866, by the way, 889, toll-free, newfangled toll-free numbers. 1-866-889-8894, our number. Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Roy, what's up?
Hey, good afternoon, Tom. I thought I'd fill you in a little bit on what went on here in Rio Rancho Saturday. Cheney and the boys came out. They tied up traffic for about 2 or 3 hours. To get tickets to get into the event, you had to sign a loyalty pledge that you would vote for them and that they could use your name in their campaign literature.
Yeah, you're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. Actually, that's all over the net. Out where we
was that little factoid there broadcast on the local TV news and in the local newspapers?
Yeah, actually it was. There's a couple of links from the Albuquerque Journal that's up floating around the web.
Okay.
And out in Rio Rancho, as you might be familiar with, is in the far northeast corner of Albuquerque.
Mm-hmm.
And still basically desert. And that's out where the junior high was that he was at. It had to have been 30 miles from the airport. Mm-hmm. Now, why he flies into the airport, does a motorcade with 25 or 30 motorcycle cops and 15 squad cars and 14, you know, they had two ambulances, they had, you know, the whole bit. Shut down the freeways. The whole, you know, why didn't they just put him on a helicopter and land him in the parking lot of the school?
Because then they would have missed all the hoop-de-doop.
Yeah. Well, there was 2,000 tickets, but there was probably about 250 protesters with the signs and things.
Mm-hmm.
And I promised my wife I would not get thrown in jail. So I just kind of headed up the dirt road toward the high school, toward the junior high. And when the cops told me that I couldn't go up there, we just had a little debate about the First Amendment and stuff. I actually was totally intimidated by the SS guy.
Yeah,
I had no doubts that he could break my back before I could even hit the ground.
Yeah.
And he would not give me his name. He would not give me the statute that he was telling me to get out. Don't go there. You're not, you know, we've shut this down. And I said, wait a second, this is public highway. What are you telling me? I can't walk up this hill?
That's
incredible. It was surrealistic.
Yeah.
But it was worth the time. And what was nice was there was lots of young folks there.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
They weren't all just graybeards like myself.
There you go. Well, thanks for the great report, Roy. We got to move along, but thank you for sharing that. I appreciate it. Keep us up to date on what's going on there in New Mexico.
Gotcha. Have a good one.
Thanks.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. California builders and contractors aren't too happy with Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's decision to allocate $3.8 million of the state's new budget to a labor studies institute at the University of California. The Institute for Labor and Employment was started by former Governor Gray Davis to provide policymakers with information regarding trends in the state's labor force, such as the value of city living wage laws. The Golden Gate chapter of the Associated Builders and Contractors of California was hopeful Schwarzenegger would follow through with his campaign promise to kill the institute. But pressure from the California Labor Federation forced the government to maintain funding.
On Friday, the U.S. agreed to make a 20% cut in some of the $19 billion in subsidies paid to American farmers each year. The agreement came during the around-the-clock talks with other members of the World Trade Organization. The cuts include subsidies for corn, corn, cotton, rice, wheat, and soybeans. Some West African countries have claimed that American cotton subsidies have had a devastating effect on thousands of farmers in their countries. The trade talks imploded in 2001 when the U.S. and European Union refused to address the subsidy concerns of poorer nations.
A union of East Coast grocery workers meets with a federal mediator today to try to hash out a labor agreement with grocery giant Shaw's Supermarkets. If a deal can't be reached for the 39 union stores in southeastern Massachusetts and Rhode Island, about 6,000 employees are set to strike this week. Shaw says it won't budge from its final offer, which includes a 27% cut in benefits and raises insurance copays without increasing wages.
Workers in Athens are still threatening to strike during the Olympics. Hotel workers, drivers, and paramedics have been warning the government about the impending strike for more than 2 months. They are demanding bonuses for the increased stress they will endure during the games. The problem? No money. The budget for the games has already spiraled above the proposed budget. The hotel strike is set to begin next Thursday. The right to strike is a valued democratic right in Greece, and the government is concerned about the potential fallout if an emergency decree is issued making walkouts illegal.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Pirates don't just exist in movies. According to a report released by the British Maritime Bureau, pirates have killed more people in the first 6 months of this year than during the same period any other year in the past decade. 30 people have been killed so far in 2004 compared to 16 last year. The most dangerous waters are off the coast of Nigeria, followed by Indonesia, Vietnam, Bangladesh, and the Philippines.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman with you, 26 and a half minutes before the hour. And lest we forget,
the evidence indicates that Iraq is reconstituting its nuclear weapons program. Saddam Hussein has held numerous meetings with Iraqi nuclear scientists, a group he calls his nuclear mujahideen, his nuclear holy warriors, facing clear evidence of peril. We cannot wait for the final proof, the smoking gun, that could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
Yeah, and we could use some truth. Truth. And 26 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. And it is time now for our mislead of the day, misleader.org. Did John Kerry flip-flop? The Republicans are really stretching. Former Enron lobbyist Ed Gillespie and his minions at the Republican National Committee have a new 12-minute so-called documentary on John Kerry. In their desperate attempts to paint John Kerry as a serial flip-flopper, President Bush is completely ignoring the fact that out of the other side of their mouth, they say he has the most consistent voting record in the United States Senate of all senators. You can figure that one out. Anyhow, President Bush's reelection campaign has resorted to gross distortions of his public statements. The campaign is now trumpeting the fact that Kerry, after voting to authorize the use of force in Iraq, described himself, quote, as an anti-war candidate, end quote. The claim is based on a clip of Kerry's January 6th, 04 appearance on Hardball with Chris Matthews, which is featured in a new 12-minute documentary, so-called, on Kerry, produced by the Republican National Committee. Here's how the RNC presents the interview. MSNBC's Chris Matthews. Are you one of the anti-war candidates? John Kerry. I am, yeah. That's what's in the ad. That's what's in the Republican ad. Now, here's what the real transcript says. The actual words that were spoken. Matthews. Do you think you belong to that category of candidates who more or less are unhappy with this war, the way it's been fought? Are you one of the anti-war candidates? Kerry. I am, yes, in the sense that I don't believe the president took us to war as he should have. Yes, absolutely. little creative editing for our flip-flop of the week from the great conservative disinformation machine, the conservative weapon of mass deception. Some Democrats who signed up to hear Vice President Dick Cheney speak Saturday, this in the El Paso Times News, a story from Rio Rancho. This is following up on the story that Roy just shared with us. And this is great. It apparently did make the local media because I have it right here in front of me. Some Democrats who signed up to hear Vice President Dick Cheney speak Saturday were refused tickets unless they signed a pledge to endorse President Bush. These types, Courtney Hunter of ACT said Friday, these types of evasive tactics are occurring all over the country as the Bush-Cheney campaign refuses to allow Americans into their events, end quote. Two men who had sought tickets reported they were required to give name, address, phone number, email address, and driver's license number, and then were presented the pledge of endorsement when they arrived to pick up the tickets Thursday. One of them, John Wade of Albuquerque, said he signed the pledge because he wanted the tickets, but then changed his mind. I got to thinking, this isn't right, Wade said. They're excluding people. That's what's got me so upset. He returned the tickets, and campaign workers returned his pledge. Well, that's noble of them, I suppose. Vietnam veteran Michael Ortiz y Pino says he refused to sign the pledge and was refused tickets. Ortiz y Pino said he was asked whether he associated with veterans, pro-life, gun rights, or teacher groups. I said, why do you need that? Campaign worker said, Secret Service stuff. Yeah, like this was all the idea of the SS. I don't think, you know, the SS, by and large, follows orders. It's the people in the White House who make the orders. The SS's job is very clearly defined. The Secret Service is to protect the president and the vice president. And that's it. President and vice president get to decide what that means. Apparently that means protect them from unpopular opinions. Protect them from hearing from people who might disagree with them. Protect them from the possibility of looking like there are protesters. We are in a tragic moment, my friends. A truly tragic moment in the history of this nation. This is truly and profoundly tragic. Well, George Bush's you can't call them war records because he was never at war. He was in the National Guard while the United States was at war in Vietnam, or at police action, to be accurate. There was no declaration of war. Another screw-up we have to make sure never happens again. You know, somebody ought to introduce a piece of legislation that says that the president cannot authorize military force without an act of Congress. I mean, it's just that simple. We do not have kings. Abraham Lincoln pointed out that the Constitutional Convention realized that an executive with unlimited war-making power would become like a king, and therefore they gave the power to make war to the Congress, the body that was elected directly by the people. And we haven't had a declared war since World War II. Anyhow, George Bush's Texas Air National Guard 1972 records, which mysteriously vanished from the Pentagon's records last year, has been mysteriously discovered. We found parts of it. Not all of it, but parts of it. Now, the rest of it's in Texas, but to get that from the Texas Air National Guard, you can't do that under Freedom of Information Act filing because it's state, not federal. And the only thing required to release George Bush's 1972 Vietnam-era records of his service or lack thereof in the Texas Air National Guard would be for him to sign a form, which he refuses to sign. But of what just was released just 2 weeks ago, just in time for the Democratic National Convention so the story could be buried,
I'm telling you, these guys have a calendar. They got 92 days from today to Election Day, and every single day they have figured out in advance what the... They know what the story of the day is going to be on October 9th. They know what the story of the day is going to be on September 16th. They know what the story of the day is going to be on October 5th. Anyway, the former Assistant Secretary of Defense, Lawrence J. Korb, under Ronald Reagan... Ronald Reagan's assistant attorney, assistant secretary of defense. From 1981 to 1985, confirmed the legal analysis of President Bush's Guard service. That is to say, George W. Bush was AWOL. Absent without leave from the Texas Air National Guard. Given proof that Bush missed 5 months of guard training session, Lawrence J. Korb said he would consider Bush AWOL. Korb said, and I quote, "If you don't show up, you're absent without leave by definition." Now, I may be wrong. It's been a long time since I had any exposure to the Uniform Code of Military Justice. But my recollection is that AWOL is only the first 30 days. And that after 30 days, particularly in time of war, you're considered a deserter. And the penalties for desertion are rather extreme. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Armin in Florida is on the line. Hey, Armin, what's up?
Are you aware of that study that's on the Internet that's concluded that big media's that are financially benefiting from war profiteering or investing in war profiteering products are 8 to 10 times more likely to be pro-war than pro-peace going up to this last war?
Yeah, I haven't seen a specific study that broke it out by corporate interest, but, wouldn't common sense tell you that?
Yeah, but I'll just bet you that the majority of the so-called zombie right-wingers that stand behind this fraud in the Oval Office don't even realize that fact.
Yeah.
No. I'd bet you that the majority don't. And something else I wanted to bring up, if I may, please.
Mm-hmm.
The day after the Democratic Convention wrapped up, this is so amazing. My wife turns the TV on when we get up, and the only channels that have Bush on running around a stage in circles, frantic, campaigning in Kansas, I think it was, was CNBC... And the MSNBC, and that's all General Electric, including Chris Mathis. GE owns him too.
Yeah. You're not going to hear any of those guys talking about GE's defense business. or they're building nuclear products, or it's just
So I mean, when do we draw the line as true free Americans with an open mind? That, has a subjective perspective, a fair and balanced, unbiased, open-minded.
Well, the very, very simply, Armin, I think the simple solution is we need to go back to rules for the game of business that are defined in such a way that you can play the game of business and you can make money, but you can't do it in a way that harms democracy or that harms people around you. And we moved very, very aggressively and very quickly in that direction in the 1930s, and we were pretty much parked out in kind of a middle area. I mean, it wasn't anywhere near as far as I'd like to see, but we were parked out in a middle area there through the 50s and 60s and 70s, and then Reagan stopped enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act, and you saw all these mergers and acquisitions, and now you have something that under Carter's administration certainly wouldn't have been allowed, where you've got a defense contractor owning a television network, and you've got a AOL Time Warner, this huge conglomerate, you've got Fox and all these empires, and it's just these are trusts by the 1881 definition. They are trusts, and they are technically illegal, and we haven't had a president with the testosterone or what. It's not even a male thing. We haven't had a president with the integrity since Jimmy Carter to take this stuff on. Armin, thanks for the call and raising two good topics. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Christopher in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Christopher, what's up?
Hey there. You're going to love this.
Okay.
I was just in contact yesterday
with a friend of mine that's involved with the special operations group that comes out of England, mm-hmm. the SAS. And he says, you know, you're not going to believe this, and I almost didn't, but this is direct from the source. He said, we actually did find two or three caches of quote-unquote minor weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. We found them 7 months ago. And we've been told, you know, it's not really a secret, but at the same time, no one's talking about it. And it's due to hit the Daily Telegraph in England on the 30th of this month.
Hmm.
So you can just keep an eye out for
Wait
that.
Wait a minute.
So
the Daily Telegraph is owned by Murdoch, isn't it?
Yep.
So on the 30th of this month, that is, you mean 30 days from now?
30 days from now.
29 days from now, weapons of mass destruction have been found.
Right.
That's going to be the daily news, the talking point for the 30th of August.
That's the word, and that came direct from a guy that just came back.
Christopher, I don't know whether I should laugh or cry. I mean, it's just...
I'm throwing up.
Yeah. Well, spread the word, and if your source... has firsthand knowledge or knows of anybody who has firsthand knowledge and would like to be interviewed and get this into the media, please put them in touch with me because I'll write an article about this for Common Dreams and we'll get it out on the web.
How would I do that? Send you an email? Or?
Yeah, just drop me an email, Tom, T-H-O-M, at TomHartmann.com, T-H-O-M-H-A-R-T-M-A-N-N.com. It's on my website. You know.
I'll call him back. It's a little bit late there right now, but I'll call him back, and I'll get that back in 48 hours.
Great. Thanks, Christopher.
Thank you.
Do good. Gary in Santa Fe, 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. Gary in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Gary, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I missed the all the hoopla about Cheney and Albuquerque, but something occurred to me. I really loved that little lady that gave the speech, I think, the Kids for Kerry at the convention. And I wonder if maybe she said that she thought the vice president needed a long time out.
Yes.
Maybe we could all, anytime he's going to, the vice president's going to be in a city. We should all get little plastic whistles and drive around whistling like, time out and give the time out signal.
Yeah, it's yes, that would be
it'd be a way of attracting attention, and we wouldn't even have to be close to the quote-unquote free speech zone to attract a lot of attention.
It would be a good one. With Dick Cheney, it's like, it's kind of all or nothing. You're torn between... his having sort of the persona of...
now what am I going to do?
Daffy Duck on the one hand, or on the other hand, his deep, sonorous,
Iraq sits on top of 10% of the world's oil reserves. Very significant reserve, second only to Saudi Arabia.
And then you get to Mr. Cheney. Would you testify alone, separate from Mr. Bush, about what happened in that energy policy meeting?
I know nothing. I see nothing, and I see nothing.
Oh, isn't it fun to play with these things? But it's the Dick Cheney Show moves on and on. And one of the things, Christopher, is Christopher, right?
No, it's Gary now.
Gary, I'm sorry. There we go.
That's right.
I lost my window when I went to the sound clips. Gary, one of the things that I've noticed, Gary, is that while John Edwards is appearing in John Kerry's commercials virtually from day one, George Bush has been running campaign ads for 6 months now. He's had Laura in them. He's had John McCain in them. I have yet to see Dick Cheney in a single Bush ad. What does that mean?
Yeah. Well, have a good one, Tom.
Yeah, you too. Do good, Gary. Thanks for the call. It's the Tom Hartmann radio program, Defending America from the Conservative Weapons of Mass Deception. 10 minutes before the hour.
Tom Hartmann will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartmann brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartmann will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war, and Tom Hartmann will look at how Western Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner, bringing you today's feature story. 49 New Jersey environmental groups in the Save New Jersey Coalition are urging Governor James McGreevy to veto the so-called fast-track development bill. The bill would grant developers fast approvals on building permits. Rebecca Miles reports.
The coalition claims the bill is unconstitutional as it radically changes the permitting system in New Jersey, and many see it as railroading 30 years of environmental protection. I asked Jeff Tittle, director of New Jersey's Sierra Club, what the bill would do if passed.
It allows developers and polluters to be able to have fast-track approval for permitting from DEP and other agencies, including transportation. What it really means is that in that 45-day clock, the public has no right to comment on permits that may affect their lives and their property and their public and their health.
What many are angry about is that this comes after a long battle to get Governor McGreevy to preserve the highland area around New Jersey's state reservoirs. I asked Thomas Borden from the Rutgers Environmental Law Clinic what he saw as a typical example of how this bill would infringe people's constitutional rights.
There's many areas in New Jersey where development or redevelopment has not occurred because the area is contaminated and is under the jurisdiction of DEP to remediate that site.
What the coalition uncovered in the bill were 12 counts of violation against constitutional rights, to include threats to public health, safety, and public property. They have brought this to the attention of Governor McGreevy. The governor has 45 days to veto or pass the bill, and cannot pass a bill that is considered unconstitutional. For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Rebecca Miles in New York.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Back to life, back to the present time, from a fantasy, yeah.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, the last few minutes of today's program, Monday the 2nd of August. Lois in Berkeley, California is on the line. Hey, Lois, what's up?
I just wanted to ask a question. You said something very interesting about how, a very large crowd of people wanted to see Carrie, and that was going to be newsworthy, and then it mm-hmm. was changed by this terror alert.
Yeah.
Based on information that had been around for quite a long time, and I wanted to know if I could get any kind of documentation for it. If I tell anybody about that, they'll say, "Where'd you hear? I heard it on the radio," and they won't take me very seriously.
Well, I can't.
Thanks, that's all.
Sure, I can't point you, Lois. I can't. Okay, there you go, Lois. I can't point you to any particular newspaper story. I haven't done the research on that. My source for it was one of the morning talk shows yesterday, and I forget which one it was, but it was one of the shows where, you know, they got a couple of talking heads on and they're having this discussion. And one of the folks, it was it might have been Capital Gang, but it was one of the morning talk shows yesterday. And the topic came up and Carrie had this huge rally, unprecedentedly. I mean, they were expecting a few hundred people, maybe 1,000, and some depending on your estimates, right, between 10 and 20,000 people showed up. And then they had to go through metal detectors. It was raining. And they had to leave their umbrellas outside, and they went in and they stood in the rain. And the point was made that this is a newsworthy event. I mean, this just typically doesn't happen. And, to get, huge, huge response, and it would have made the news, and boom, you got the terror alert. Now, I'm not going full bore conspiracy theory and saying, well, therefore, it must have been that the Bushies... But, the terror alert, the fact that the terror alert is based on information, some of which precedes 9/11, is in the news reports, in the mainstream media. Some of it is recent. Much of it is recent. But even beyond that, so they've got information that maybe the Citibank building would be under threat. Well, then why not evacuate the building? Why tell people in Kansas that the Citibank building is under threat? Well, because you want to scare them, too. I just see this as psyops. This is psychological operations. And it's so conspicuous. Whenever there's a problem, if you go back and you track all the times that the administration has dragged out scary news, it's almost always when they are having bad news or the other side's got good news going on. And I realize it's a broad generalization. I'll lay down some specifics in the coming week. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today. Thanks to Rama for showing up and engineering it for us. Thanks to our sponsors for making it possible. To Shelby for LaPree for streaming us around the world. And Ben Burge for our archives. Mike Toth for our archives. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Great discussions today. And thanks to Jay for our music. Thanks to you for showing up. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie Global Warming, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet. The